WRIF's award-winning Night Call, Detroit's longest-running phone-in talk show with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan. Peter and Julene will be voicing their opinions, and they want to hear yours. Call them at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter and Julene.
Peter Werby is not here, but I am, and thought I'd give you some of that knack because we honor lead singer Doug Figer, who died of cancer at the age of 57. So sad news for Detroit music, and we want to definitely wish the best to the Figer family. Of course, a lot of you know his brother, Jeffrey Figer. And so My Sharona, the knack, oh, man, I remember when it came out. So we will dedicate this show to him, and once again to Howard Zinn, the historian, author, professor, and civil rights activist who passed away a couple of weeks ago. And I'll be playing a part of something that he, one of his speeches, and it says a lot about the world today. This was pretty much not that long before Howard Zinn passed away. So anyway, hey, Julene Jordan here for Peter Werby, and you know how we do it. It's a call-in talk show, and usually when Peter is away, I get so many phone calls because, the number one thing people accuse him of doing is cutting people off. So I'm not going to do it. So call and just let's talk. Free flow, all right? 313-298-WRIF, 313-298-9743. You can always email calltalkyes@WRIF.com. @yahoo.com. So welcome your phone calls. Other things going on, of course, the Olympics going on, and what a sad thing for the luge athlete who lost his life. And one other thing that I thought, Big Brother is watching. Have you heard about this? This is from ABC News. During the Olympics, the feds will be reading your tweets and blogs. As the Winter Olympics begin, the Department of Homeland Security has disclosed it will be monitoring the comments and posts on websites and social media like Twitter for information on possible terror threats. Of course, I'm sure that doesn't include any of us, but it says among the sites listed in a privacy impact statement filed Friday afternoon that the Drudge Report is being watched, the Huffington Post, Twitter, Google, and this a website where I got this, The Blotter. So according to the statement, they're doing it to provide situational awareness in the event of natural disaster and an act of terrorism or other man-made disaster. So if you're tweeting, you are being watched. Be careful what you say. Also, something that really pop culture-ish got to me today, and I'm wondering what your opinion is on this. Silent Bob, you know Silent Bob, Kevin Smith, Clerks, Jay and Silent Bob, he was thrown off of a Southwest flight for being too large. Yeah. Well, apparently, you know, he says, hey, listen, I'm fat. That's the situation. Oftentimes he books two seats, but for some reason he was on standby. There was only one seat and they kicked him off, and he is completely PO'd. So he's after Southwest Airlines in a big way. I wonder, what do you think about that whole situation on flying and fat politics, which I mean in a way of a positive for people who are of a larger size, because they go through a lot of discrimination and there's a lot of hatred and a lot of negative feelings toward people who are larger than your average, you know, skinny little mini that exists out there. So, yeah, Silent Bob kicked off of the plane. I don't know about that one. And much going on in Iraq and Afghanistan. 12 Afghan civilians were mistakenly killed. This is what it says here. 12 Afghan civilians died Sunday after U.S. rockets mistakenly hit a house during the much-trumpeted offensive to clear the last Taliban stronghold in the Helmand province. And, of course, this has prompted an apology from the U.S. And meanwhile, did you watch any of those morning talk shows today? Boy, you have Biden going against Cheney and Biden saying about Iraq that it wasn't worth the horrible price. Finally, someone is saying something that makes sense here, especially, well, Biden says he tells NBC's Meet the Press that the war also has cost the United States support from other nations. Do you think? I mean, really, I don't know if any of you have traveled overseas lately, but when I was over, it was, you know, there's a lot of negativity, especially when you're right there and they're asking you about what's going on in your country. And they're a little bit better with our current president. But when Bush was president, it was pretty awful. More than 4,370 U.S. military personnel have died in Iraq since former President George W. Bush ordered the U.S.-led invasion in 2003, and we know how it went from there. 313-298-WRIF. Something else that really got under my craw that did not surprise me at all. You know, Blackwater. We've talked a lot about Blackwater on this program, and Blackwater has changed their name. For starters, now I'm not really sure how to pronounce it, but it's just XE, so Zay or Z. They're back, and they're vying for a $1 billion contract to train Afghan national police. Blackwater's worldwide legal woes, we've heard about these, haven't dimmed their prospects of making more money in Afghanistan. Z Services is in the running for a Pentagon contract potentially worth $1 billion to train Afghanistan's troubled national police force, they say. And during the presidential campaign, then-Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton, now Obama's Secretary of State, of course, backed legislation to ban Blackwater and other private security contractors from Iraq. But now it looks like they're back, different name, and they're going to continue making all kinds of money. You know, terrorism seems to be a big word this week as well, as we kind of go through the headlines of the last week in politics and around the world. And Dick Cheney went after Obama big time. And when is this guy just going to go away? Just be quiet. Because you know what? We don't want to hear from you anymore. You are done. You are no longer vice president, or, you know, president, as we used to like to call him. Vice President Joe Biden now has rejected these assertions by Dick Cheney. He did this today, that the Obama administration was soft on terrorism and waterboarding. And he accuses Cheney of trying to rewrite history, which, well, that's really no big surprise. This was just so nauseating. The former Vice President Cheney shot back with a tone of sarcasm, saying, well, I guess I shouldn't be surprised by my friend Joe Biden. They keep going back with this. Dick Cheney's a fine fellow, but he's not entitled to rewrite history without it being challenged. I don't know where he's been. But, and then this whole, my friend Joe Biden. It's just a big fat gagger. And then they go on to talk about waterboarding and things like that. And Obama, though, now challenging terrorism critics. And he said to CBS News Today, the most important thing for the public to understand is we're not handling any of these cases any different than the Bush administration handled them all through 9/11. It's true. They're not. He says they prosecuted 190 folks in these Article III courts, referring to the civilian courts, got convictions, and those folks are in maximum security prisons right now, and there have been no mistakes. So the back and forth on the morning talk shows was quite entertaining, I have to say, today. 313-298-WRIF, that's 313-298-9743. And once again, if you want to email us, calltalkyes@yahoo.com, because we do read them on the air. So, you know, as much as we try to not talk about Sarah Palin, it's just so hard sometimes, because it's the infighting, you know. I mean, she is so off her rocker and so to the right and so neocon that, you know, she makes some people like Dick Cheney look kind of mild, to be honest with you. Now, Dick Cheney, on a roll, is after Sarah Palin. He says he took issue today with Sarah Palin's recent suggestion that President Obama could win re-election by starting a war with Iran. Did you hear this one? I mean, really. Cheney says, I don't think a president can make a judgment like that on the basis of politics. The stakes are too high. The consequences too significant to be treating those as simple political calculations. So Sarah Palin's idea for Obama to win is to go and start a war with Iran. Isn't she something? Cheney also, during the show appearance today, declined to endorse the former Alaska governor's potential 2012 bid, which she says she, you know, would be completely ridiculous not to do that. It would be good for the Palins. Well, it wouldn't be good for me or you. I know that. I just still don't think it could happen. But she's, you know, we just keep talking about her. Let's see. We are going to attempt to go to the phones here. Jade is answering your phones, by the way, and we want to thank her for being here tonight. And Peter, you know, he always does all of this. He makes it so easy, but we are going to make it through. Watch us go. We have, let's see, Ron calling from Chelsea. Ron, welcome to Night Call. Thanks for calling.
Hi, how you doing?
Doing fine. How are you?
Good. I saw, just want to make some comments. I didn't see it live, but I heard about it. I thought what Cheney said was great. Absolutely perfect.
Which part? About Sarah Palin or to Biden?
About Biden.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, from what it sounds like, he was rewriting history, right? What are you saying?
I'm saying what Cheney said is right, and Biden and Obama don't have a clue.
Ah, okay. So you're a Republican.
I'm not saying I am or I'm not.
Okay. So what was right about it? What do you think was right about it?
Why we went there? I mean, that wasn't Bush's. It was Bush's decision, but the Congress voted on it. Republicans voted on it, and then Biden saying, "Oh, it's a disaster. We're going to lose." I mean, if you're in the Army, why would you want to fight if your own vice president says it's a waste of time?
Yep. This wasn't about that, though. This was about terrorism.
Yeah. Well, our president can't even say that word.
Well, actually, he can. In fact, I just went through a whole diatribe of how he's challenging the critics who are, you know, critical of how else would you handle it? What would you do if, say, the guy who flew in, you know, and tried to light his underwear on fire here in Detroit? What would you do to that guy?
Politically correct? I'd rather not say it.
Preferably, if it's politically correct, you can say it on the air, Ron.
I guess I wouldn't give them to the CIA. I'd give them to the CIA and get all the information that I could out of them.
But okay, you know, but he is cooperating. You're aware of that, right?
Well, he's got a lawyer, so he shut up. So he's getting the same rights all of us as citizens have.
Okay, but when you start picking and choosing who has the rights, then they can start kind of picking away at us as citizens. That could then develop into that.
They shouldn't have the same rights we have, you and I.
Okay, so, I guess we'll leave it at that. At first I didn't understand, but now I know where you are. Thanks for calling the show.
And another thing.
Oh, okay.
There's a reason you're on 11, because everybody's asleep.
Oh, that's a new one. Oh. That is a new one. Actually, this is a rock station, and what this is a public affairs fulfillment. It's part of you do this at all of our radio stations here at Greater Media. There's a certain amount of airtime that needs to be dedicated to public affairs and public service and things like that. So this show has actually been on the air for something like 40 years, and so I think that's the reason we're still on the air. So thanks a lot, Ron. You have a great night. All right. Anyone else want to chime in on that one? Please do. 313-298-WRIF, 313-298-9743. I'm Julian Jordan, in for Peter Werby, who has been doing this show for, I think it's at least 40 years at this point. Long time here on the WRIF airwaves. And, you know, I really don't like doing the show without him, but I always have a great time. I just, it's, you know, we have a thing. He sits here, I sit across, we have a great time. He rants, he goes on, and once in a while I throw my two cents in. But, you know, girl's got to do what a girl's got to do, and we're going to get you on the air. Let's go to Phil in Belleville and see what he has to say. Phil, you there?
Yes.
Hi, welcome to Night Call. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Thanks for putting me on the air tonight. I appreciate it.
No problem. What's on your mind?
I was calling what you guys were just talking about, Dick Cheney there, right? I'm an ex-Marine myself. I just wanted to say that my concern is put them all down.
What's that now?
Put them all down.
And who are you talking them all? Who are them all?
Taliban, all of them. I just feel that today that, I don't know, all us Americans are getting screwed over, you know what I mean? So,
how are we getting screwed over? It's the innocent civilians, like the 12 people that they just, you know, blew to bits, and they're just sorry about it. Sorry, civilians.
I know, but
I mean, don't you feel a little bad about it?
What's that?
Don't you feel just a little bit bad about that?
I'll be honest with you, I really don't, because like I said, I did 3 terms in Iraq, and it's unbelievable what I've experienced in my time. It's I guess I can't really put it in words, but I just feel that today that society is not seeing what we're seeing over in Iraq and Afghanistan. I just, you know, to my homeboys, it's this is what it's all about, you know what I mean? So.
Well, there's a reason that we don't see that is because the mainstream media refuses to put the real pictures on the news. I mean, we can look and see the luge accident. You can look that up, right now online, on YouTube. But we don't see what goes on there because they don't want us to know. Because if everyone saw that, I think more people would be in the streets and they would be really pissed off.
I agree with you 100%. I wish more people today would be like the way that you're saying that you are. And I really appreciate how you feel about it because... I when I come back here, I just don't feel people, how can I put this, I don't get any respect, you know, for what I have done for this country, you know.
Don't you think it's the government that's not giving you what you, how about health care? Are they taking care of you?
Not whatsoever. No, the government's pretty... be honest with you, I know I'm not supposed to swear on this.
Please don't.
It's shitty. You know, they're not taking care of us. And I be honest with you, I don't get any respect more than from anybody when I come back here saying thank you for what I have done. You know what I'm saying? So
There are a whole lot of people who are thanking the troops. I know that. But I'll tell you what, the big FU is coming from the government, and that's who we should be mad at.
That's right. I agree 100% with you. You know what? I thank you guys for that, and I really appreciate it because the government don't give two shits about us whatsoever, to be honest with you.
All right, Phil, thanks, and please take care, okay?
Yeah, thank you very much.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
313-298-WRIF. Stories like that just anger me. He's not being taken care of by our government. Let's keep the phone calls going. 313-298-9743, and we have Mike in Newport. Hi, Mike.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing excellent. How are you?
Oh, not too bad. I was just calling in to comment on Phil there and the rest of the guys there. The government, they're just playing us for stupid.
Well, for sure.
And then the media, you know, they just play right into the government's hand to scare us and tactics and go out and do this and do that. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, where do you get your news?
Oh, I watch CNN and all of them. I switch back and forth and watch all of them all day long.
Yeah, stay away from Fox because there's no redeeming value whatsoever.
No, Fox is worthless.
It is. I mean, talk about propaganda. And really, you know, CNN's cool and everything, but it is just one repeated story after another. And
that's all it is.
There's a lot of really great sources out there. There's one called BuzzFlash.com that I would recommend.
Oh, BuzzFlash. Okay.
BuzzFlash.com. And as far as the mainstream papers, of course, the New York Times and the Washington Post. So if you're going to do newspapers, do that online.
Gonna lie to you.
What's that?
The Washington Post is going to lie to you.
No, the Post is actually pretty good. It's the Washington Times that are owned by the Moonies, Reverend Sung Young Moon. He owns that. That's what you don't even pay an ounce of attention to that one.
No, I won't even waste my money.
if you want the good thing. Well, I appreciate you calling, Mike.
No problem.
Where's Newport, anyway?
It's south of Detroit.
South of Detroit. Okay. Well,
yeah,
great.
South of Detroit.
Excellent. Well, thanks for calling Night Call. We sure appreciate
your
call. Okay, you bet. Bye bye. And let's see, we'll take a couple more and then we're going to take a quick break. Keep your calls coming in. They're hot as usual. And let's go to Daniel in Oak Park.
Hi.
Hi, Daniel.
Hi. Yeah, I don't know, you know, I mean, it's like, okay, is it the word hate, dislike, or whatever, but this whole thing of Republican thought, mentality, ideology, whatever it is, but it's a thing that they are reducing humanity to lower levels. They're dehumanizing people, and I hate that. I mean, that's what I see in this society, and you see it here, you see it there. You see it, and you wonder why people don't like American ways or whatever. I mean, in a manner of speaking, I just see what's happening is that, you know, in the healthcare thing, in the economic thing, in the banking thing, in the insurance thing, in the pharmacy thing, it's all this thing of dehumanizing people. And, you know, I mean, what's going on?
Well, as we usually like to say, it's a real psychopathology that's going on, and a psychopathology of hate and fear and rage, and this is how it manifests itself, and it is scary.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that's something we're supposed to struggle against.
Right, yeah, absolutely. Fight against more than struggle, right?
Oh, yeah, struggle for freedom.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Daniel, we'll keep up those positive thoughts. We appreciate you calling Night Call.
Thank you.
All right, you bet. 313-298-WRIF. I'm Julie Jordan in for Peter Werby tonight. And let's go all the way to Santa Fe, New Mexico. Chris is calling. Hi, Chris. Welcome.
Hi, Julian. Thanks. I can't really jump on the let's blame government, quote unquote, for everything because I kind of like the government that we have right now. You know, times are bad, and of course, the people in power are always going to get blamed, fair or not, when times are bad.
No, I blame Bush. Still.
You know that old story about the kid that murders his parents and then asks the court for leniency because he's an orphan.
Okay.
That's the GOP right now. You know, they drove the country into the toilet. They wait a year and they say, put us back in power because everything's so bad. And they kind of double down, actually. They blame Barack Obama for all the bad that we're having, kind of like the murderous kid blaming the judge and the jury because they didn't bring his parents back to life.
Yeah, and it's venomous blame. I mean, it's pretty over the top, I'd say.
Well, it's just ridiculous, and it's blatant hypocrisy. And, you know, we're going to have to get through this. The thing is that progressive Americans like yourself, mm-hmm. like me, we're facing the same old ignorant, greedy thing that we've faced throughout our history, and we're going to have to beat it the same old way, which is what we're doing, talking about it, bringing it to light, facing the foe, never backing up, together.
Well, unfortunately, there's still shows on the radio, the terrestrial radio, as we are right here. I know you're listening at WRIF.com, that can still talk about this, because you and I both know, Chris, because I know you follow a lot of politics and a lot of shows, that, what is it, 95% of them are way to the right.
Well, I wouldn't say 95%, but I will say there is a lot. Within the past 10 years, there are a lot more liberal talkers than there have been before, and there will be more.
I hope so, because they're closing down networks.
Well, yeah, they're closing down networks, but the talk is kind of, you have like Randy Rhodes. She's on Clear Channel. 7 years ago, that would never have happened.
That's a good point.
she moved her way into it.
She is a wild woman. People think I'm wild and out there. No.
Have you ever spoken to her off the air?
I have.
Oh, God, she could make coffee nervous, that woman.
I know. I love her.
She's absolutely, Rachel Maddow, who moved from what used to be Air America.
Yeah.
Now she's, on Meet the Press this morning.
Yes, she was.
Things are evening out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I enjoy her show quite immensely. Now, Dick Cheney, Joe Biden.
Well, Dick Cheney is slime, even though he stepped up and said that he's against "Don't Ask, Don't Tell." You can't. Get
well, his daughter is a lesbian. Am I not correct? Isn't it about time?
Well, it's about time, and I don't think people should be given credit for stating the obvious. You know, any love is good love, and people are just people.
Yes.
Biden is by far the better American and better human.
Well, he has better teeth, too.
By far.
Oh, my God. Those things are blinding, really.
You have a good night, Julie.
All right, Chris. Thanks for calling all the way from, the amazing Santa Fe, New Mexico. Sure do love it down there. Peter and I had a great time traveling when we used to be on a radio station all the way down there in New Mexico. Okay, we are going to take a quick break. We have Chris in Northville, Jason in Port Huron, Bill in Lake Orion, Lars in Madison Heights, Tom in Allen Park, and open lines it's for you at 313-298-WRIF. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Jolene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
Verizon Wireless is the best destination for affordable, unlimited calling. And that's good to know, because you don't have unlimited funds. Is there a money tree in your garage? Or a goose laying golden eggs? Doubtful. And while you may find the end of the rainbow, you will likely not find a pot of gold. Yes, the hard truth is, you earn your money and want to spend it wisely. That's why Verizon Wireless gives you unlimited calling, now for less, $30 less than ever before. It's only $69.99 monthly access. Yes, get unlimited talk on America's largest and most reliable wireless network to any number in the U.S., even landlines, for a new lower price. And that's good, because sadly, buried treasure is only in pirate movies. To get our best value ever on unlimited calling, go to VerizonWireless.com/new, Verizon Wireless, or call 1-800 to join in. Activation, early termination, and other fees apply. Coverage details at VerizonWireless.com.
It's another new year, and your debt is higher than ever. Credit card balances that keep growing, rising medical bills. Maybe you lost your job, or you're afraid of losing your home. That's the bad news. But you can work through your debt problems with help from Credit Card Relief. No, we're not a consolidation loan, not another one of those credit counseling deals, and not bankruptcy. We're Credit Card Relief. We've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. If you're struggling with too much credit card debt, call us for a free consultation. We have an outstanding record of performance helping people get out of debt in months instead of years, all while saving thousands of dollars. Call Credit Card Relief right now. The consultation is free and the relief is real.
Call 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. That's Credit Card Relief. 866-290-8282. 866-290-8282.
Do you want a wireless laptop but your credit score is holding you back? We can help. Guaranteed. If you have a bank account and can afford weekly payments of just $29.99 for 12 months, we'll send you a brand new wireless laptop no matter what your credit looks like. Call Tronics Country now. You're approved for a brand new Dell or HP laptop. Call now and we'll also include a free MP3 player and free LCD TV with your paid order. Call 800-990-2258. Still not sure? Then hear what our customers say.
I'm really enjoying my laptop.
I just wanted to call to say how happy I am with it.
And I'm very pleased with their service, so I would suggest to anyone that is looking for computers or trying to find computers, Tronics is the best place to call.
Call now and lock in your free gifts. You will not be turned down. Call 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258.
Detroit's Rock Station, 101, The Riff.
Is this on? Thank you. All right. Good morning, students. This is your principal speaking. Please listen closely to the following schedule changes. First period will be replaced by sleeping in. Second period will be replaced by warm weather. Third period will be replaced by belly flops. Fourth period will be replaced by goofing around. Fifth period will be replaced by batting leadoff. But there will be no changes to lunch. It will be in session every day.
School may be out for summer, but lunch is always in session. If your kids rely on subsidized school meals, call Gleaners Community Food Bank of Southeastern Michigan at 1-866-GLEANER or visit feedingamerica.org/summermeals.
A public service announcement brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan.
All right, many topics that we are covering. Ooh, wow. Talk about over-modulating there. I'm Jillian Jordan in for Peter. He is not here tonight, so we're taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF or 313-298-9743. Been talking about Dick Cheney and Biden going at it today on television. The Olympics are watching you on your Twitter as you tweet the mistaken killing of 12 Afghan civilians. And, you know, got a call from a guy who served over there and said he really isn't affected by it. He doesn't care. Talking about Blackwater and many other things. Whatever you want to talk about, feel free to do it. We can talk about local. We can talk about national, international. It is wide open here on Night Call. So let's go back to the phones. Lars in Madison Heights, he's been waiting for a while. Hey, Lars, thanks for calling.
Hi, Julian.
Hi, how you doing?
That's kind of an abstract topic I want to talk to you about.
Sure, go for it.
I think I might have picked out the psychological roots to political affiliation.
Oh, good. Well, let me know.
Okay, because there's this book that I got from the library called A Whole New Brain, which is basically explaining the functions of the right hemisphere of the brain as opposed to comparing them to the left.
Okay.
The right half of the brain deals with empathy, emotion, creativity. And then the left half of your brain deals with linear, logical, you know, just more humdrum functions.
Sure.
I was thinking, what's that sound like to you? It's like you have a hippie brain and a neocon brain in the same head.
Who's you?
No, I mean,
anyone?
Because I know, I mean, it's like depending on which one is more dominant. If you go through life feeling your way, and you know, just try, you know, you probably wouldn't be very good at certain tasks. I mean, because it's like jobs like, you know, if you're a businessman or working class where you have a job that has like a hierarchy, a chain of command, set rules for every, that govern every possible interaction you could have, it's a, you know, that would be more of a left-dominated brain, basically the kinds of jobs that can be outsourced overseas, where if you're creative, if you need to see things from other people's perspectives, then you have a more right-oriented brain.
Uh-huh. Like,
and I was thinking, like, because it never made sense why working-class people would vote Republican. Because, you know, it's like logically they should be in favor of protectionism, entitlements, you know, whatever.
Sure.
But from this perspective, if they're thinking in a very linear fashion, because, you know, that's the, then the Republican Party would make sense to them. because it's like there's nothing about, you don't care why terrorists are killing Americans or how Americans got within, you know, range of the terrorists. You just know it's like, well, kill the terrorists and then they won't be able to hurt us.
And that's, or, it's cut and dry, right?
Yeah, and it's our same thing with economic policy. It's like a lot of regulation is bad, therefore no regulation would be best of all, so no regulation whatsoever.
Well, you put a lot of thought into this, Lars.
Yeah, and it's like, if you think about like the other half of the brain, that, you know, I'd call it the hippie brain. I think that might be a problem with why liberal politics just can't get the same, I don't know how to put this, the same, because, you know, like when you have, like, because when a Republican wants to influence people, they just hire airspace, they hire experts. Whereas, you know, like the hippie brain, they'll make giant paper mache puppets or do some public acts of defiance that only appeal to other people who are in the empathetic mindset.
I like the, you know, giant puppets.
Yeah, it's like, an average person is going to look at, like, what the hell is that? What's that got to do with anything? And just, you know, and then the illusion at that point. Whereas because the, you know, because I consider, you might call advertising propaganda, but that's like the very most effective method of influencing people that has ever come around.
It's not waterboarding?
No, because, I mean, because well, like, if a company wants you to buy a product, they just figure out a way to get you to subtly associate it with longevity, fertility, high social status.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Whereas, you know, it's like if, you know, it's like if someone really liberal wants you to feel something, then they come up with some, like, stage theater or just some crap that just doesn't appeal to, you know, to the majority of the target audience.
Okay, but not always.
No, I mean, because I'm sure that they could, because, like, if, because as a joke I made with a friend, it, it's like instead of going overthrowing Saddam, you just start like buy some airtime record. You're like, democracy gives you longer lasting erections. Saddam Hussein and Maqtada al-Sadr have gay Israeli love children.
Oh,
or I've heard that they have gay Israeli love children.
Really?
See, you don't need to confirm it because, you know, that's how you ruin someone's career in America.
Right, you just hear
anonymous
it?
Rumors.
Yeah, throw it out there. Well, I'll remember that. Don't start any about me. All right, yeah. Lars, thanks a lot for calling.
Okay.
Interesting stuff from Lars tonight here on Night Call. We have, let's see, Alan Park. Tom calling from Alan Park. And welcome to the program. Hi, Tom. Tom, are you there?
Hey. Yeah.
Hi.
Are you there?
I am.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was so confused by what that guy was saying.
Yeah. It was deep stuff, man.
Yeah, really.
You can go back to what you wanted to talk about.
I almost forgot.
Well, it said something about dehumanizing people and something about...
Right.
Some, yeah.
If everybody got together, and do what we're supposed to do, I mean, everything would be just fine, right?
You mean as far as...
As far as, just in the world alone, You know what I mean? I mean, he's talking, there's kind of communism, everything else, all the shit going over in Haiti. Oh, I'm sorry. All the crap going over in Haiti, stuff like that. I mean, we got word relief, but we don't even have relief here in America,
Yeah, I hear you. All right. Well, Tom, thanks for calling from Alan Park. Sure appreciate it. Thanks for calling the program tonight, 313-298-WRIF. And that is also 313-298-9743. We have a few open lines. And so why don't you fill them up with whatever it is you want to talk about. It looks like we have Bill and Lake Orion, and he wanted to talk about the guy who called who served the country. Hi, Bill.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing excellent, thank you. How are you?
Good. I wanted to personally thank that guy for serving his country. I really appreciate what the men and women are doing for us as far as keeping our country secure,
mm-hmm.
Fighting for freedom for everybody. And as far as the 12 civilians that got killed over in Afghanistan,
I mean, that was just yesterday.
I believe that they, they give them people a chance to get. That's a war zone. I mean, they give them people a chance to get out of that town.
Where are they supposed to go?
Well,
they have no money. They have no vehicles. They have no infrastructure. Where are they supposed to go? It's like what happened with Katrina. Really.
Well, I mean, it's a war zone, and if stuff like that's going to happen. I mean, they should have got out of town and went out in the desert and camped out for a couple of days until you get, everything.
I just don't think that's realistic. And I think that, I don't know, I just think it's inexcusable, in my opinion. But everyone has your opinion. You have your opinion. I have my opinion. I just mourn. And, I can barely even read the accounts of these things without breaking down, honestly. I mean, even though I think a lot of us have become so immune to it. Do you feel like you're immune to it?
Well, pretty much, yeah.
That's bad. Don't you think that's bad?
It's not good. It's not a good thing. No, I don't like to hear about innocent people getting killed.
Well, little babies, innocent men, women, and children.
Right.
Having their, their faces blown off. And what did they do? They did nothing. And why are we there? Because of lies, based on lies. So anything that happens like this is inexcusable, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So let's just hope that all this madness ends sooner rather than later.
Country for too much more of this nonsense.
What's that? Wait, say that again. You cut out.
Our country can't afford too much more of this nonsense.
Oh, yeah. Well, we couldn't afford it 8 years ago, and look where we're at. The reason we're all in this position is because of this. That's where it started.
Well, you know, I can't even, you know, I can't even find a job. It's the economy's so bad.
Yeah, how long you been out of work, Bill?
6 months. And I was self-employed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a self-employed contractor, and I can't hardly buy a job anymore. I mean, people are, it's so bad out there. It's, you know, everybody's doing work for nothing, just job. And, you know, some of these guys, I don't even know how they're making their bills or paying, you know, for what they're doing these jobs for. It's just ridiculous.
I don't know how they're doing it either. In fact, we'll talk about this in a little while, that more homeless Americans are living in their cars and campers. It's a whole article that I got from Yahoo News, I think from the LA Times. It's a bad state of affairs, and boy, well, we all just kind of have to, I think it's just, we all have to come together continually somehow and help each other at this point.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Okay, Bill. Well, thanks for calling. We appreciate it. Best of
no
luck
problem.
To you. I hope you find work soon.
Yeah, me too.
All right on, brother. Okay.
Bye.
Take care. And have a good night. Thanks for calling Night Call 313-298-WRIF. A couple of open lines, so think about what you want to talk about. And let's go to who's been holding the longest. That would be Chris in Northville. Chris in Northville, hi. Welcome to Night Call. Thanks for calling.
Hi, how are you doing?
Doing great.
Yeah, I had a few things to say. One was about the war in Iraq, that, like you said, we went there under false pretenses. But mm-hmm. one thing a lot of people don't know is we're using depleted uranium rounds there.
Uh-huh.
Which are causing a lot of problems with birth defects. And another is talking about the war in Afghanistan. Nobody talks about how poppy production has gone up 700% since we went there.
Oh, yeah, well, we look the other way, don't we?
And those are both countries that we invaded.
Absolutely.
If somebody invaded our country, wouldn't people want Americans to fight back?
Yeah.
You know
what I'm saying? Yes, that's right, Chris. And you know what? We wanted their oil. We wanted that pipeline that we gave them all that money. We gave them, I can't remember what it was, $40 million, I think, just to start that pipeline.
Yeah, we build them up and then we take them down.
Every time. We love you, we hate you, and then we will take you down. And that's not something I'm proud of as an American.
No, that's the thing why a lot of people don't like Americans, is because our government's going around smearing our name around with a lot of things that people don't know because they don't report it in the mainstream media.
Right. Like, we're good people, but the government is doing a lot of bad things and making us look bad.
And that was on my second comment.
Yeah.
Is you guys are talking about, you know, Biden, Palin, all this left, right?
Oh, yeah. Biden,
really?
Palin, Cheney.
I mean, really? Yeah. But the thing is it's kind of like pro wrestling, isn't it? Are you out there, but you're all friends in the end. And you got to look at who their interest is. I mean, what about these banks and what about the Federal Reserve, where all our income tax money goes to? And how much influence could that buy around the world?
Okay. All right.
I mean, that's unconstitutional, isn't it?
Are you one of these Ron Paul types?
No, but, I mean, we fought central banks twice in this country in history. Thomas Jefferson said that would be the greatest thing to take us down rather than a standing army.
Are you a teabagger?
What's that?
Are you
teabagger? No, I'm just somebody that doesn't want to see the country that my dad fought for and all my relatives fought for get smeared around the country by some political interests and globalists for the most part.
Okay, Chris. Well, thanks for calling Night Call. We appreciate you calling in at 313-298-WRIF. And let's see. Let's go to Sterling Heights. Stan is calling and he wants to talk about the ex-Marine who called. Hi, Stan.
Hello. That Marine said it perfectly about the Taliban. Just take them all down.
Take them, every single one of them. What if they're just innocent and happen to be there in the line of fire?
Well, you know, that's part of war. I mean, look at World War II. How'd we end that?
Listen, I mean, why are we there in the first place? It makes all of this not okay.
Well,
why are we there?
Okay, but just, you know, like that guy that on the plane that was going to light his underwear or whatever. How much money are we going to spend on a trial or whatever for him?
Well, how much money are we spending on war, which is why the people have no money in their pockets here in the United States?
Well, the reason we don't have money is because everything's exported.
Well, okay.
What American jobs? Detroit used to be the Motor City.
Yes, it did. Yes.
Some genius came up with imports.
But, you know, G.W. Bush, 8 years bankrupted this country based on lies.
Well, yeah, everybody lies in the government. Revolution.
Yeah, well, this is a little bit, this one is inexcusable. This one's a little bit bigger than just a little lie. I mean, this one has affected this whole country and this whole world. And what is it, 5,000, troops have died from our country alone, let alone the millions, really, who have died in Iraq and Afghanistan and around the Middle East.
There used to be a saying called, for the people, by the people.
Yeah.
Do you know anybody that's people that has a say-so on any of this anymore?
Well, I think that we need to speak out and as at every opportunity. We do have a voice. We're not being muffled. Here I am talking, in the 10th largest market in the country. I've got a microphone. I've got a voice.
Well, I realize that, but I'm just saying a revolution would be real good.
Let's bring it on. All right, Stan. Here on, now that Valentine's Day is almost over, we'll say it's a revolution of love. How about that?
Well, I don't need love. I just need to clean out the White House and our government and take their, what is it, when they retire, they get to keep their money. They don't go on Social Security and have to suffer like everybody else.
You want them to suffer like everybody else?
For sure.
Okay. All right. Well,
I got to get to work. We'll talk to you.
Stan, you're hardcore. All right, man.
Bye.
Bye. Stan means it. I'm telling you. Does he ever mean it? We're going to take one more phone call before the break, and we'll be right back after that. Let's go to Harrison Township. Tim is standing by, and he's talking about those cowardly Taliban.
Yeah, how you doing?
Hi. What's up, Tim?
I just had something to say. I've done a couple of tours myself.
Yeah. In the Army?
Army. It is the wrong thing that would happen. I mean, I'm not agreeing with any kind of civilian deaths at all. I don't agree with it all myself. Them guys should have been a little more precise. We have the war, we have the knowing, the knowledge and willpower to be able to hit what we're aiming at. But the thing we're not addressing either is these little cowardly Taliban guys, they always hang around. I mean, they're always around civilians. I mean, these guys are so cowardly, they'll throw little kids in front of them. I mean, I've seen it. I mean, they throw little kids in front of them.
You know, I've heard that one. People bring that up. And I'm not discounting that that doesn't happen. But
right.
I wouldn't say that the Taliban are cowardly. They have taken down, look what happened with Russia.
Yeah, true.
I mean, my God, really, think about it. This small army fighting the Russian army, and who won?
Right, yeah. It's just they don't go about the things that they should, though. I mean, you have to be there to see what I'm saying. I mean, it's hard to even explain, but it's just sickening how they'll hide behind women. They'll hide behind children. They'll strap little five-year-olds, with bombs on them. I mean, these guys are sick in the head.
How often does that happen?
It happens quite a bit, believe it or not. It happens quite a bit. You won't get in the mainstream media like we say. They only put in what's going to be good for whoever's talking.
That's right. And that's, I have a real problem with that because that is what people need to see and people need to know. I mean, they need to see it all. But, we are being, it's behind a veil, so to speak.
Yes, you are. I agree with you and Peter, 95% of the time, you know what I mean?
That's pretty good.
Seriously, I do.
That's pretty good, Jim.
I just want to address that point. I mean, these guys, I mean, it's just sick what they do. I mean, I can't explain it myself. It's just, you have to be there to see it, and I don't wish that on anybody.
Well, yeah, I was invited to go when things were beginning, and I think that my parents wouldn't have been able to make through the week that I was going to be there. You know, I mean, any parents I can't imagine with their kids over there fighting. I don't know how in the heck they cope with that.
Yeah, I know. I know myself. I know if my kids ever wanted to do it, I would
say no.
But it's their choice, but I would try to fight them on that.
I implore you to do that. Okay.
Okay.
Thanks, Tim.
Thank you very much.
All right. We appreciate you calling in to the Night Call Talk Show tonight, 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. And I do need to check the email. I haven't done that yet tonight. It's calltalkyes@yahoo.com. We do have time for one more call before the top of the hour. Always have to get those commercials in so we don't get it. We get in trouble from upstairs if we don't get those in. Let's go to Tom in, I think it's Imlay City, right?
Yeah, that's where we're at tonight.
Hey, Tom, what's going on?
Not much. Well, actually, we just got done driving out because the Champion Bus Factory, if you know what that is, actually there was a chemical fire and it exploded.
Ooh, in Emily City?
Yeah, in Emily City, and that was like a really big source of like jobs around here.
Oh no. How many people were employed there?
I don't know. I can't give you like any rough numbers, but what I can tell you is it's been burning all night, and we literally just got back from like we drove down there. We drove kind of alongside these railroad tracks, hoofed it a little bit to get to where a point where we were within like pretty good distance of this, and it was building to collapse. It was just, it wasn't cool to see, but it was just like kind of weird to see. Just it was bad, man.
I'm sorry to hear that, and I'm sorry that anyone is, who even has a job in this day and age is maybe losing it. Hopefully it won't be for too long.
Yeah, but it was like, it was kind of interesting because we weren't really supposed to be going down there.
Yeah, because it's kind of bad for you, Tom.
I know, but...
Did you breathe this stuff in?
No, we were within a good distance, but we were far enough away that we weren't, like, anywhere near, like, getting sick or anything. We're not sick, but, like, breathing any of this stuff in.
Huh.
But we could see pretty much everything that was going on. You could see, like, the people running around. We were up on a pretty, like, high vantage point from it.
Mm.
So interesting to just see all that going on.
Yeah, well, I wish the best for everyone who works there, their families, and we appreciate you calling in. Thanks, Tom.
Yep, catch you later.
All right, absolutely. Night Call with Peter Werby and Julian Jordan. No Peter Werby tonight, just me, Julian Jordan, will be right back to take your calls. Make sure that you give a call. Jade is standing by, 313-298-WRIF.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julian Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Julian will be taking more of your calls right after this.
What are the 10 stupidest mistakes men make when facing divorce? Find out at a complimentary seminar sponsored by the domestic litigation firm of Cordell & Cordell, Thursday evening, February 25th. Registration begins at 6 p.m. Seminar starts sharply at 6:30 p.m. at the Westin Southfield, Detroit at 1500 Town Center.
Guys often have to work a little harder to be awarded primary custody, but when you're disadvantaged, you'll continue to be so unless you do what you can to help yourself.
Attorney Joe Cordell of Cordell & Cordell is quoted by the Wall Street Journal. Find out what actions can have disastrous consequences during a divorce and how to continue to play a key role in your children's lives. If you're facing a divorce, perhaps one you don't even want, you must attend this free seminar. Space is limited. Register today by calling Cordell & Cordell at 313-465-1999. That's 465-1999. Or register online at CordellCordell.com. That's CordellCordell.com.
This is Matt Demmer from Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury. I'm here to tell you that now it's more important than ever to buy an American-made vehicle. We at Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury are still in the business of leasing and want to help you. Whether you're looking for the hot new Lincoln MKS, the sleek Lincoln MKZ, or the hottest crossover vehicle, the Lincoln MKX, Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury in Dearborn is your one-stop shop. At our dealership, we believe in honesty, reliability, and support for our customers just like you. We encourage you to check out our virtual showroom on our website, Demmer.com. You can check out our vehicle inventory, and you can bet that if we don't have the vehicle you're in the market for, we'll do our very best to get it for you. While you're online, we invite you to get a no-obligation internet price quote. Whether you come into our newly renovated dealership or visit us online, we at Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury invite you to experience the Demmer difference today. We're located on Michigan Avenue just east of Oakwood in Dearborn. Give us a call today, 313-274-8800. That's 313-274-8800. Or check us out on the web at Demmer.com.
Are you having trouble paying your credit card bills? You didn't expect to get so deep in debt, but now you need a way out, a way to relieve the anxiety, a way to avoid disaster. If you have over $12,000 in credit card debt, call Debt Settlement USA at 1-877-560-8877. Debt Settlement USA has a proven debt reduction program that can cut the amount you owe and get you out of debt faster than you could on your own. They've saved millions of dollars for their clients, and they can help you get back in control again, too. If your resolution is to get out of debt, call Debt Settlement USA for a free consultation. 1-877-560-8877. Your call is confidential, and there's no obligation. obligation. If you have over $12,000 in credit card bills, they can cut the amount you owe and help you get out of debt. Call Debt Settlement USA right now. 1-877-560-8877. That's 1-877-560-8877.
Detroit's Rock Station, 101 WRIF.
The Ref.
101 WRIF.
The Ref. What's up, everybody? This is Sully from Godsmack.
Hello, Motor City. This is Mike DeCree from Pearl Jam.
The Ref.
Hello, Motor City. This is Jimmy Page from Led Zeppelin. Your radio's locked on 101
WRIF.
If it rocks, it's on the roof.
Everything
that rocks.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
Peter Werby off tonight. Julie and Jordan, that's me, here solo, doing my own thing, and having a good time with you guys. Calling in 313-298-WRIF. We're going to go right back to the phones, talking a lot about unemployment and war and, you know, lots of different topics, as we usually do. We call it ADD Radio. Let's go to Pinckney, where Jason is on the line. Jason, welcome to Night Call.
Hey, Julian, how's it going?
Excellent. How are you?
Oh, not too bad. I'm just sick and tired of people calling up and blindly thanking our military for fighting for our freedoms and all this nonsense, where if you look at the, you know, conflicts in Iraq, it's not Iraq, and if you've been there, you should learn how to pronounce the country's name.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that. I didn't want to be a big snob, but it's Iraq.
Well, you need to just stop them in the ground. I mean, it's just sad. I mean, it has nothing to do with our freedoms. I mean, stop, you know, open your eyes a little bit. And then another thing is these same people, they just could care less about civilian deaths. And,
at all.
You know, every action has an equal and opposite reaction. And, you know, look at terrorism. Maybe terrorism comes from that.
Yeah, they're not just doing this to do it, the terrorists. They have a long, deep-seated hatred toward countries who come in and invade their territory and kill their people.
Absolutely. And then another thing, I was happy to hear somebody bring up the topic of depleted uranium. I don't know if you guys have ever done a show on that.
We've talked about it, yeah.
But for the people out there, it's a byproduct of nuclear energy. It's one of the densest. It is the densest material known to man. We tip it on our armaments,
uh-huh.
Like for, you know, tank shells and bunker busters and all this stuff.
Right.
It has a half-life of 4.5 billion years. That means it will be around forever. Now, you breathe this stuff in, and it's basically we've had nuclear war over there. I mean, that's the bottom line.
Well, you know what's going on. Iran is moving ahead on uranium processing, and things are beefing up, so to speak, with them, as usual.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm living over there, and, you know, back in the 91, and my wife has a child that, you know, is severely deformed. I'm going to be angry.
Well, hell yeah.
People are allowed to be angry, and people should be allowed to question the government. I don't want these things done in my name. And it's time for us to wake up. I mean, it's just the bottom line. Read a book.
Yeah, thank you.
You know?
Thank you so much, Jason. Don't just sit there and look at the TV, because you really... And
well, if
so
you're going to watch Democracy Now...
Amy Goodman. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, watch alternative media. Don't say, well, I flip between MSNBC or CNN.
I have to say, Rachel Maddow's pretty damn good. Jason.
She's about the only thing good on corporate media.
Agreed.
But other than that, it's garbage.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of garbage. You've got that right. So you just gotta go deeper. Democracy Now, a great show. Amy Goodman, an amazing host. And
absolutely,
I love her.
Or read a book. I mean,
or read a book. Yeah, you know, hey, let's Howard Zinn, People's History of the United States.
Noam Chomsky.
Noam, do it. Yeah.
Do it now.
Okay.
Have a wonderful evening.
You too, Jason. Okay. Thanks a lot for calling Night Call. We sure appreciate it. 313-298-WRIF as we head on over to, which, by the way, a couple of open lines. You feel free to call. Sue in Harrison Township calling in. Hi, Sue. Thanks for calling. Hi.
Something about ADD radio.
Yeah, so we can go all over the place.
Used to be normal before the FBI got to me. You know, Lars mentioned advertising. Don't you just love those sock monkeys?
Love the sock monkeys, sure.
Aren't they cool?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay, and Cheney, you know, why is he still alive? Doesn't he have like a bad heart or something?
Oh, yeah, he's had like four heart attacks, yeah, you know.
Oh, my God, he got spare parts somewhere?
Well, and he's so angry, and he's so, just kind of mean. And...
Oh, I don't like him.
No.
It's like, go back in the dungeon, stay in there.
Yeah, we call him Darth Vader around here, because kind
of
that's
how... What do you think of that Iman that was killed? Is that how you pronounce it, Iman? You know, he was shot like 22 times or something?
Yeah, I would think it's a bit excessive.
And he was handcuffed, and they found him in a truck. Now, did they test his hands to see if he even had a gun or he made any...
Well, I think that he shot at one of the canine...
Now, did he kill the dog or did they kill their own dog?
Yeah, I'm really not too sure. Those are details that I'm sure will unfold as the story unfolds after we just got the autopsy and results where we found out that there were so many shots. That number was, quite large.
Just a thought. Don't you think that the FBI members should have to take polygraph tests and maybe give them sodium pentothal just to make sure they're telling the truth?
I don't know about the sodium pentothal. Well, maybe.
Well, look how much power they have. Don't you think that...
They have a lot of power, yeah.
Yeah.
They absolutely do.
Power corrupts, you know.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Do you have an FBI file?
Me?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Okay. Peter does, my co-host. There's like nothing in there.
Well,
it's pretty boring.
I'm saying that they're not all good people. I'm sorry if any of you are listening, but, they really got to screen out the bad guys.
Okay. Well, hey, Sue, thanks for calling from Harrison Township.
Oh, thanks. Bye-bye.
Okay. Have a great night. Or great morning, I should say. It's getting late. 313-298 WRIF. I saw someone ringing and they hung up. So don't do that because we have, under an hour to go before we do a couple of interviews that Peter has left behind. And next week when he's back, I'll let him know he'll let you know where he's been. He never lets me tell you. He's just so silly like that, but that's okay. We won't tell on Peter. James in Livonia calling about the war. James, welcome to Night Call.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing fine, thanks.
All right. I've heard a couple people now call and complain about this war in Iraq and how it's not for freedom.
And Afghanistan as well.
And Afghanistan. And I'd like to just take a minute, though, and have people think, how else are you going to stop terrorism? You can't sit down and negotiate with these people. And yes, fair enough, Iraq wasn't the big evil monster it was portrayed to be. However, this is where terrorists live. This is where they come from. And when we go over there...
Where is this? Where are you talking about?
Iraq and Afghanistan.
Because here's the deal. Do you know that 9/11, that they all of those guys were from Saudi Arabia and maybe one was from Jordan? Not one Iraqi, not one, dude.
No, okay, fair enough. I'm not saying Iraqis are terrorists. I'm not even saying that all...
But you're saying that
terrorists.
We should be there because they did it, but they didn't do it.
No, see, I'm not saying they did it. I'm saying that's where they are. Okay, and that just gives us a place to fight.
Well,
if they would come
aren't
here
they
fight,
in Pakistan? Aren't they more in Pakistan and Yemen at this point and certain parts of Afghanistan?
That's where they go to rearm and they do all their little meetings and all that kind of stuff, yes. But when they want to fight and they're feeling a little frisky, they come over to Iraq and there we are for them.
I don't know. Where are you getting your info?
I've been there.
How long ago?
I got home 2 months ago.
And so what? When you, I don't understand. Who are they? Who are you talking about? Al Qaeda? Are you talking about the Taliban in Afghanistan? Who are they?
I'm guessing they're Al-Qaeda, but they were definitely angry people with rifles.
But you don't know for sure, do you, when you're there?
Well,
I mean, you guys don't really know.
They had, well, no, but it's pretty much a good rule of thumb. If they're pointing a rifle at you, they don't like you. Right?
Well, yeah, and well, but we're pointing a lot of rifles, too.
How, you know, actually, we don't point the rifles at people.
No? Then how did those 12 innocent civilians get killed yesterday?
You know, that was poor leadership and poor soldiering. That's not my American Army. That was a couple losers who were wearing my uniform.
Yeah, but it happens all the time. At least a half a million innocent civilians have been killed. That's a half a million.
Yeah, there are far too many civilian casualties, and part of that is the rotations are too long. A lot of soldiers are under a lot of stress, and you know what? None of that makes it right or okay.
And when they're stressed and they come back here and they have PTSD, and then no one takes care of them. They're
that's
just
true.
On their own, and that's a bunch of crap.
It is. It's garbage. I mean, I've been going through it, too. I came back on my first tour, and they only gave me 6 months of medical care. And then they told me to go get my own.
And there you go. And now what are you doing?
Now I'm trying to find a job on my own because nobody will hire me.
You're not going back, are you?
I hope not.
I hope not, too.
Pretty much over, but, I mean, it's really a bad thing. I mean, I feel bad for the Iraqis that live there. But one thing is, while we are there, we do a lot of humanitarian missions. We do improve their status of living.
Well, that's because we destroyed their entire infrastructure. So now we're making sure that maybe they have some lights or some water. I mean, we ruined it to begin with.
Honestly, a lot of the
we bombed the hell out of it.
Yeah. But most of the things we bombed were precision. I mean, it's not like we went through like it was back in World War II and leveled city blocks. I mean, the structures we took out posed a threat.
I just can't agree with you, but I know that you were there, this is what you're told, this was your job, so, you know.
Well, I mean, I've seen it, too. I don't just follow the blind. I don't just take orders and call it good. And
well, you did have to, though. Didn't you have to take orders?
You do have to take orders, but you don't have to follow them blindly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you may have to follow them in the heat of the moment, but there's always time to figure out what was really going on. And there's still certain decisions you get to make on your own.
So James is kind of a rebel, huh?
No, James is like a lot of people in the military. He educates himself. I mean, if you're over there and you're risking your life for something, you're going to want to know why. You're going to want to know who for. And
I think those are a lot of things that no one can answer. I really do.
Well, that's because there's so many different answers and so many different situations.
It's very confusing. We shouldn't be there in the first place, for crying out
loud. Well, no, maybe not there. But,
yeah.
I mean, where else are you going to go to fight?
Nowhere.
Exactly. And this, as sad as it is, this is where it is. It's not that populated. The places where these attacks come, most of the civilian population knows they're coming before we do. When you're rolling down the road and all of a sudden there's nobody out in the playground anymore, there's nobody out picking up stuff from the side of the road, they already know something's going to happen to us before we know it's going to happen.
Oh, hell, I wouldn't go outside even if I didn't know, you know? All right, James, well, we appreciate you calling into the show tonight, and I hope you find a job, and I hope that to hell that the folks in the armed forces take care of you because you deserve it.
Well, leadership's idiots. It's the soldiers that think.
Yeah. Okay, James, thanks a lot. James calling from Livonia, talking about the war. And been waiting a little while, Ed and Taylor. 313-298-WRIF, by the way, a couple of open lines if you want to get in right now. You can, and here we go. James, or Ed, wanting to talk about unemployment. Hi, Ed.
Hi, Julene.
Hi.
Yeah, well, you know, I've been hearing a lot of people talking about, you know, unemployment, can't find a job in that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was sitting in a restaurant the other day, and these ladies were talking about, you know, these younger people that had no income, you know. And I really started thinking, you know, what they need to do is bring back general assistance. I mean, they had it in, like, 75 when, you know, the economy was, I'd say, a lot better than it is right now. And, you know, I can't understand, you know, I mean, nobody, it's like there's no push for it or anything like that.
You mean as far as getting cash instead of just food stamps? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, just for, you know, people without children go in and get welfare.
Yeah, it's been 20 years. Bill Clinton kicked everyone off of that. There were some things I liked about Bill, but that's not one of the ones. And you know that the number of people who have bridge cards and have food stamps, I mean, it has completely skyrocketed. Even at Michigan State, the student-run food bank has seen a 25% increase in usage in the last couple of years. I don't know if you listened to the show last week. Are you on Facebook, Ed?
No.
Okay, well, Facebook, you can join these groups, and then some of them are really stupid, you know, whatever. I love Snicker bars, I'm a fan, or whatever. And there was this one group where people became a fan of drug testing for welfare people, which made me just sick and so angry I'm still mad about it. And those types are the types of people who would say to you, Ed, are you out of your mind? They're going to take my money that I, you know, worked hard for, and they're going to sit on their asses and do nothing, and you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it was funny because Bill Milliken was a Republican, and he thought it was a mistake when they got rid of that. And you can see now people getting into the job market. If people had jobs can't find jobs,
right?
Or say a person has been out of the market for a long time, it just makes, especially when they're giving all that money to Wall, you know, the banks,
right? Right, absolutely. And then so people who can't get the jobs are taking the jobs that are you get paid less money per hour. And then the people who usually have those, you know, minimum wage jobs can't find anything. It is an absolute disaster. I know so many people in that position. I can't remember, Ed, did you say you're employed?
Yeah.
So you're lucky. Have you had the job for a while?
Yep.
Yeah. So do you feel secure?
Well, pretty much.
Well, I am glad. I got to tell you, when we do these shows, sometimes I just need some good news. It's absolutely depressing, especially when you read these stories. Like I read today from Time, more homeless Americans living in their cars and campers. Single fathers, they've got their kids in the cars. And, you know, it's a sad state of affairs.
Yeah, it's terrible. You guys keep up the good work.
Thanks,
I've been listening to Pete for years, and, you know, you guys do a good job. You're an addition.
Oh, thanks, Ed. I sure appreciate that. Thanks for listening. Peter will be back next week. Okay.
Great. Okay, bye.
And even though he's gone, I know it drives him nuts when he can't be on the air. And I miss him. I sure do. But we do get to talk a little bit longer. He's going to listen to this anyway. Hey, Peter, how's it going? Eric in Ypsilanti wants to talk about the Cheney-Biden deficit, it says, which, by the way, 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. And you can give a call. There's we have about three open lines right now. Hi, Eric.
Oh, hey, Julian. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you, Eric?
I'm doing fine.
Good.
First of all, I think actually both men made some valid points. Biden said that the Bush machine started these two frivolous wars.
That's right.
And ironic is Iraq and Saudi Arabia are in a huge surplus.
Uh-huh.
And we're in a huge deficit. And I think when Peter comes back, you should let him know that he should update where we're at with the whole budget and trade deficit on his website.
Okay, peterwerbe.com, by the way, W-E-R-B-E. He'd be so proud that I spelled it for him.
Right. And
so he needs to update a few things. It's going to be a while, too, because I don't know if he's going to be online for even a week. So.
Yes, and Cheney made a valid point about criticizing Sarah Palin.
Yeah, what's up with that, huh?
That we should invade Iran. She's extremely stupid.
Well, she's so stupid, she's dangerous.
Yeah.
She really is. And who is it? Okay, even the Tea Party. I don't even know who runs these Tea Parties anymore. It seems like there's so many factions. I don't know if you saw this, but it says Tea Party leader Dale Robertson says Sarah Palin is a wolf in sheep's clothing. Sarah Palin's well-delivered speech and her attractive demeanor, if you consider her attractive. I can't even get past her, her idiocy to even find her attractive. It says that it's more than a veneer for her less attractive political philosophy. She seems more like a duck out of water among true conservative constitutionalists.
Right.
Palin demonstrates her neocon flippant viewpoint and her as how naive she is, as she seems envious of the swelled numbers of patriots pledging their allegiance to all things America and not to a Kool-Aid-ridden political dinosaur. And this one is something that I can't even read. I think this is from the New York Times, from the Huffington Post. So what are we going to do with that gal?
Put her back in her laughter.
Well, it's scary because even Michael Steele, you know, the head of the RNC, is courting the Tea Party, planning on meeting with local activists from the Tea Party.
Uh-huh.
So, well, we'll put him in that crazy group, too. All right. Well, hey, thanks so much for calling.
You're welcome.
Eric, we'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Okay. Have a great night.
You too.
And let's go to Tom, driving back from Pennsylvania. I don't know. This is just looking. Why would people want to support liberal something? It cut off there. Tom, welcome to the program.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Pretty good. Hey, I've got a ninth grade daughter that came home from school the other day, and they are studying sociology.
They're
studying the, you know, like the left and the right and liberalism and all that stuff.
Yep.
And her question to me was, why would anybody want to support the left or socialism or anything like that when you have some ambition in life to strive to be, to, you know, to excel above the status quo? I didn't have a really good answer, to tell you the truth. And I told her tonight when I was driving back, I'd call you guys. And
you know, that's really scary. That it seems as though there was a teacher who put this in her brain.
Put what in her brain?
Put this idea that if you're a liberal, then you're lazy, and if you are striving for more, then you're on the right, which is just couldn't be further from the truth.
Well, that wasn't what she said. She said they were given the stuff straight up. You know, here's what the left, here's the right, here's the middle. You know, and they're studying all the different facets of like the political arena. And she said she doesn't. You know, she says, why would anybody want it to swing left if you want to like push and do something over and above what everybody else is doing? And her point was that she said, you know, if, like with socialism or communism or, you know, things of that nature,
mm-hmm.
that why would I, her, she wants to be a vet, by the way.
Okay.
And she said, why would I want to work harder, take all these college prep classes and do all this stuff that I put more out there than everybody else and be put into a position where somebody says to me, well, hey, you've got to make the same as somebody else, or everybody's just going to be on the same. You know, we're going to put everybody on the same plateau. Everybody's taken care of no matter what you do. And I didn't have a really good answer for her.
Well, because really the answer is that not everyone's going to be on the same plateau. That's what this country is, you know, based upon. It's really, I mean, kind of a caste system, if you will. But I think it seems as though they confused her. You know, because I'll tell you, usually those on the left are the ones who, you know, love the kitties and the puppies and hug the trees. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I don't know.
So who's on the right then?
Who's on the right? Well,
yeah, I mean,
it depends on how right you get. If you're Sarah Palin or Glenn Beck, well, then the complete psychotic folks
are
on the right.
That's goofy talk.
The other people are those who, well, you know, there's fiscal Republicans, those who care about their money, and there's those who are a little bit more, on things like abortion. They're a little more relaxed about things like that. So, I mean, it's hard to really pinpoint one thing because really we are just kind of this myriad of left to right and in between.
Well, how would you explain to, you know, a kid of that age that in the left, I mean, you know, we have to admit things the way they are.
Mm-hmm.
And the left is more, if you make more, we take more. And she says, why would I want to push to make more if I'm going to be penalized?
Oh, okay. Well, you can tell her, though, that there's a cap on that. So really, if it's the way it should be, the more she makes, the more she pays out. But that's not going to happen. They make so much, and then they don't have to pay any taxes on it. She doesn't even need to worry about it. She really doesn't. She doesn't.
Okay. Well, I don't know. Like I said, I don't still feel like I have a good answer for her.
You know what I think you should do? Because this one is really tough. I think you should really explain it and send an email to Call Talk Yes. at yahoo.com. Okay. And I'd be interested in seeing what Peter has to say about this.
Okay.
Because I'm still kind of confused. So maybe if you take a little more time to explain what they told her and what she's learning, maybe we can figure this out. Because we want to help her.
Well, the other problem is, I mean, not problem, but I mean, but the other thing is, like, in our household, we're not left and we're not right. We're just kind of, like, I don't know, I call it, like, more independent. And we look at, you know, when it comes time for the elections, we talk about the different candidates and stuff, and we always, you know, we always push them, because I've got three kids, to think outside of a gap, to say, I'm voting Democrat just because everybody's going Democrat. Well, I tell them, no, you have to look at the candidate, you have to look at the person, mm-hmm. and see, because there are good Democrats and there are good Republicans. And the position that I'm in right now with her, that I've been talking to her about a lot, is that I truly feel that we do need a third party to break this, yeah. this deadlock between the Civil War, which is the two parties have created, and they won't let it go.
I For mean, sure.
We're in a civil war between the, instead of North and South, it's Republicans and Democrats.
But they're still all so much the same. In so many ways,
oh, yeah.
as well, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, when you've got, you know, I mean, even like now, when they're talking about, you know, losing control of the House and the Senate, the Democrats are, and the Republicans are all excited because it's like, oh, we could just screw everything up that the Democrats can't get anything done, but that's what they both do.
Yeah, they've made a real mess out of things, as per usual, Tom. Thanks for calling, and drive safe. Hang up and drive.
All right, see
ya. Okay. All right, bye-bye. What are they teaching these kids? What are they telling them? That's a tough one. Scott in Westland, calling wanting to talk about Afghanistan.
Hi, Jolene. Well, yeah, I want to talk about the distinction between Afghanistan and Iraq, and also a little bit about why civilian casualties, or at least why I think some civilian casualties occur, you know, in Afghanistan. But I can't resist making this joke. You know, what's wrong with the statement? Dick Cheney, the man who brought Osama bin Laden to justice. Well, A, Osama bin Laden is still at large, and he was the vice president. I thought Bush was president, you know, was in charge, right?
You know? Right.
So what does Dick Cheney have to say about that? You know, I mean, you know, they had 8 years, and Osama bin Laden is still thumbing his nose at us every chance he
gets. Yeah, Osama bin forgotten, for sure.
Oh, but okay, but this relates to what one of your earlier callers was talking about. As opposed to Afghanistan, Afghanistan was a platform for terrorists when we invaded. Iraq wasn't. We created a terrorist haven in Iraq when we invaded. Mm-hmm. Now, we very efficiently, you know, overran what was left of, you know, the Iraqi army. And toppled Saddam Hussein's regime. However, forget about even the internal strife. We didn't secure the borders. And so basically, there was a period immediately after we invaded Iraq where basically you had an open border between Iran and Iraq. You know, so anybody who was inclined, you know, to carry on a jihad, you know, against the United States was able to basically just walk across the border. And furthermore, not only was a lot of stuff imported across this border, but vast warehouses of munitions, you know, just plain old high explosives and stuff that belonged to the Iraqi army, vanished and were ferreted away, you know, in a country that's the size of California.
Yeah.
So basically, it's that unfortunate joke, and this is a really grim thing to say, but
grim is it? Can I take it?
Okay. Well, no. It's what they used to say about Italy under fascism, under Il Duce. Mussolini, is that, you know, when the fascists were in power, at least the trains ran on time. And so, no, under the iron fist of Saddam Hussein, no terrorist was able to operate freely inside Iraq without his permission. And because of sanctions, because of the threat of American airstrikes, he may personally have had ambitions to make terrorist attacks against the United States, but he wasn't, because those sanctions and those airstrikes and that no-fly zone were actually working.
Yeah.
But, okay, now,
and they're working and killed a million children during those sanction years.
Well, yeah, I know, but see, the thing is, and this is also the terrible thing to look at, is that how many Iraqis have died since we invaded? So, you know, it's hard to... I know
too many. But, and okay, too many Americans.
But now I want to make this sort of somewhat subtle point. I don't want to make excuses for anybody for civilian casualties, but particularly in Afghanistan, I think that one of the reasons why you get a lot of civilian casualties fighting the rebels in Afghanistan is because of their tribal lifestyle. And this is a very abstract academic thing to say, but in their tribal society, they don't have the same division of labor that we have, where you have a standing army that has has a base and has their own cafeteria, for instance.
Well, yeah, we fired all of them, and then we started rehiring. Remember that?
I'm talking about Afghanistan now.
Oh, okay, Afghanistan. All right.
Yeah, because you're right. We dissolved the Iraqi army.
Yes,
which,
we did.
You know, again, and there was the thought at that time was that they were all Ba'athists and they were all loyal to Saddam Hussein, which may have been, true, and that you simply couldn't trust them, you know, and that there was no reason to try and use that organization, and so it was dissolved. But in Afghanistan, basically, you have a situation where the distinction, you know, between it, there's no strong distinction between a standing army and the basic, you know, tribal society, you know, and so that's the reason why I think a lot of places where a lot of these Mujahideen warriors are living, they're living among women and children, and because they don't, you know, they are fighting a guerrilla war in a tribal society. So basically, if you figure out where one of them is living and you drop a guided bomb on them or something like that, yes, you end up taking out, you know, a lot of civilian casualties, and I say that's unfortunate, and I don't want to make up excuses for anybody, because yeah, it is despicable.
Or make light of it.
But that's I think one aspect of the Afghani conflict. You know, that it's hard to get around. That basically you're not fighting a standing army, and these people are, and I'll borrow that term, embedded among the, you know, the civilians of Afghanistan. You know, mm-hmm. because of the nature of the conflict. Although the other thing is, I would say is that the terrible thing is, like, even with these weapons that we have today, people make mistakes too, you know, and so that's one of the reasons why, if you're too concerned about that, you wouldn't want to get involved with it personally, because even under the best of circumstances, things like that happen, you know. Things don't always work the way that you think they're going to, and the intelligence you get can mislead you sometimes, you know. So because we have a lot of friendly fire incidents where we actually, you know, take out our own troops,
yeah.
or the Canadians, or you know, something like that. That has happened in Afghanistan and Iraq,
yeah.
I believe, you know. So, but that's what I'm saying, is that basically I think it's, you know, the, you know, and that's, I guess, the phrase I would use, is that they have less division of labor in their tribal society in Afghanistan, and that's why it's much harder, I think, to distinguish between civilians and, combatants in that situation.
I'm sure it is.
I know that's a hopelessly academic thing to say.
Right, I hear you. Okay, Scott, thanks for calling.
Okay, bye.
Scott from Westland calling tonight. And let's go to William in Heartland. Is this like a lighthearted phone call? William, hi.
Hi, this is William again from Heartland.
The
guy who makes cheesecakes and all that stuff.
Oh, William, Cheesecake William, how you doing?
Yeah, I just want to wish you like a happy Valentine's Day and all that stuff.
Well, that is so nice of you. Thank you.
Well, to me, deep down, everybody is tired of all these wars and all that stuff.
Worn us down as a society, and broken a lot of hearts and families.
I don't care where you live at. People are tired of all these wars and all that stuff. Have all these nice cities get wounded for no reason at all.
Right. It's absolutely criminal. William, thank you for calling.
Yeah, you have a good day.
We'll talk to you soon. You too. And you have a good night, actually, at this point. Take another phone call, and then we're going to take a quick break, and then one more final segment of the Night Call show tonight. These shows sure do fly by, don't they, Jade? And thanks to Jade, as always, for answering the phones. Bob called. I don't know where are you. You are Bob. Where are you?
I'm in Romulus.
Romulus. Hi. Welcome to Night Call.
Hi. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thank you.
You're doing a great job without Peter.
Oh, thank you. Well, I try to just, you know, keep it going here, you know.
Yeah.
Keep it on the air.
Yeah. People, I don't think, really realize that Dick Cheney was part of Nixon's administration.
Yeah, he's been around a long time.
And wasn't Nixon doing bombings, illegal bombings in Laos and Cambodia?
Mm.
So I mean, for him to, you know, sit and talk about somebody else, I mean, it's really ridiculous.
Well, because he doesn't care. He does not care. He's evil.
No, he doesn't. He's been a war criminal for 40 years.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, as far as the civilians in Afghanistan, people don't realize who's in charge over there now. This General McChrystal is the same one that was covering up the death of Pat Tillman.
Yeah, right. The friendly fire, right.
Right. And not only that, he was also in charge of the siege of Fallujah in Iraq, which turned Fallujah into a piece of Swiss cheese.
Yeah, and they keep recycling these guys. Like, what is it?
You know, and I'm sorry, I'm driving a truck. I stopped. And then, you know, we elect President Obama, which I voted for him. You know, I mean, I'm really far left of him, but he was the best out of the, you know, a lot.
I hear you.
But he's turned into such a weak president that it's shameful.
Well,
I mean, what he's doing
over there in Iraq and Afghanistan is absolutely no surprise to me. I knew it. I knew, and I hate that it's the lesser of the two evils. But I'll tell you what, I'd still rather have him than McCain and Sarah freaking Palin in there.
Well, with the Supreme Court ruling recently.
Oh yes,
you know,
awful.
It's just going to turn this country further into a fascist state. You know, sure, we're going to put an American spin on it. It won't be Mussolini's fascism.
Unfortunately.
It will be a fascist state after this November election.
Where are we moving, Bob? Where do you want to go?
Where do I want to go?
Yeah.
I want to go as far left as maybe Hugo Chavez and take back the country.
Okay.
You know, I mean, there is such a thing as the commons, right?
Sure.
Everybody owns the roads. Mm-hmm. Aren't the rich people getting rich off of the commons, but the common people are getting nothing?
Seems to be the way it goes.
You know, I mean, and isn't that why everybody hates Hugo Chavez? Because he took back what the people rightfully own are the minerals in the ground, you know, from the rich people in New York. Now he's an evil person.
And he donates proceeds from the Citgo gas to the poor of his country. He does quite a few good things, that crazy Chavez.
How many houses did he heat in the Northeast?
That's right.
Robert Kennedy's organization.
In the Bronx. Wasn't it the Bronx where he helped people who couldn't heat their own houses? Yes. Some rotten guy he is.
He wanted to help the bus system in Chicago. Give the poor people a card. They ride for free. I pay for the gas.
Yeah.
They didn't want to do it. You know, he's an evil person.
Yeah, that's so evil. How dare he heat those people's homes, Bob?
You know, I mean, the common people in this country don't realize that this country, they have turned it against each other, and it started with Reagan. You know, I mean,
yes.
What was Reagan's first thing he did? Fire the air traffic controllers. Let's go after the unions.
Mm-hmm.
They want to go after the lawyers. They want to go after the teachers. Well, what did Pol Pot do? He went after the unions, the lawyers, and the teachers.
Yeah, Reagan, one of the worst presidents ever. Bob, I need to take a quick commercial break, but I sure appreciate you calling. Call the show again sometime, okay?
I will. You have a good night. Huh?
All right, you too. And we will be right back here on Night Call. There is an open line, 313-298-WRIF. This is your last chance to get your opinion here on WRIF.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Jolene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
Do you know someone who always seems well-connected? Here's your chance to one-up that person and then some. Welcome to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, your online connection to half-off or more deals from tons of Metro Detroit businesses. Simply log on to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com for special online coupons and discounts you can't get anywhere else.
This week's featured deals are Premier Pet Supply in Beverly Hills and Fast Frames in Bloomfield Hills.
All you have to do is visit MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com. You'll save time and money by shopping from the comfort of your computer. Heck, Smack. You don't even have to get dressed. No shirt, no shoes, no problem.
Shot naked, man. Yeah!
Dressed or not, just go to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com and you'll be connected to these incredible deals and more. MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, man. Hey, like, this chair is really cold.
MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Julene Jordan.
Peter will be back next week. We have one final segment and a couple of great interviews coming up with Peter right here at 1 o'clock a.m. Eastern Time. A podcast up at noon tomorrow, by noon tomorrow, at WRIF.com. And of course, be our friends on Facebook, because you can get them all right there on their end. Interact with us a little bit. So this is, yes, a phone-in talk show. So let's do that very thing. Mo in Detroit's been waiting for quite a while. Mo, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Hello?
Hi.
Hey, Julie, it's Maurice. How you doing?
Maurice! What's up?
You know, a couple of days ago, a friend of mine, she was standing on her porch in Southwest Detroit with a grandchild. Grandson. Two came back and started shooting. One was on foot, the other one was in the car. She got shot in the butt, bullet missed her colon, landed in the lower, it's called lower, you got your upper lower.
Intestine?
Intestines, okay. The bullet put like 7 holes in her stomach. Right now, they can't operate where the bullet is at, okay?
So this is a drive-by. Your friend was shot in a drive-by.
No, no, no. These other people, it was a straight bullet.
Wow.
Okay, the thing about it is, you know, I want to set up a fund for it or something like that, but I do not know how to go about doing it.
Yeah.
So, you know, you stupid people out there shooting.
Yeah.
No, y'all don't know what you're doing. Playing with guns. I was introduced to guns ever since I was 8 years old.
I want to tell you what. There's at least one mass murder a week. There was one today in California where a man wearing a hooded sweatshirt walked into a San Francisco Bay Area church, opened fire, and wounded a couple of teenagers. But there was a...
But Julie, that's not the same as you standing up there minding your own business and two little punk ass kids start shooting the parents and show them the right way how to grow up. If you care than not, you was considered a punk.
No. Well, you know what, Maurice, you should email us the information. We'll see if we can help you out.
Yeah, I really would, because you don't think about it. She's a cab driver down here. She's like 62, 63 years old. You know what? If they don't get that bullet out of her, she's going to die. And she'll die of an infection.
I'm so sorry, Maurice. That's horrible news.
You know what? She was my favorite cab driver.
I'm so sorry. Well, you know what? One
thing I will say, everybody talking about the Detroit police, they caught that SOB on foot. So a salute to the Detroit police for catching that dude. I hope they catch the other one. You know what? If it would have been hit a grandson, it could have been an upper body wound. Him could have killed him.
Oh, boy.
She's fighting for her life. They got her stable, but she's still fighting for her life. She'll never be the same. She might have to wear a colostomy bag for the rest of her life. That's bull crap.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Maurice.
You know what? I don't know why I'm saying it. The people I'm talking to, they're so stupid. They couldn't even find out how to tune in the station anyway.
Yeah, well, maybe you can just school these people a little much, Maurice, a little more, okay?
Send them back where they came from.
Now, listen, you stay strong, and we'll be thinking about your friend, and send us an email at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. All right, Maurice?
Okay, I'll do that, you know.
All right, we'll talk to you soon now.
You're a rock and roll beauty queen.
All right. Thank you. That's a new one. I like it.
All right, bye-bye, baby.
All right, bye-bye. That's horrible. Horrible, horrible. Minding your own business. Guns. Okay, here's Michael and Troy, and wants to talk about Iraq and Saddam Hussein. Hi, Michael.
Hello. How you doing, Joey?
I'm doing excellent. And you?
I'm doing fine, thank you. And I would actually like to call you Jules, if you don't mind.
Call me Jules. That's my nickname.
Yeah,
sure.
I imagine so. At any rate, I'm from Southern California, and I'm calling out of Troy, Michigan tonight. And and I would like to thank you and your administration for doing a fine job on the coverage of this situation, this story. And I would like to add a few of my comments, if you don't mind.
Go for it.
And they're positive, and they're negative, however anyone can take it out there.
Okay.
And what I think is, I think that, you know, when we invaded Iraq, I think a lot of people neglected the fact of, like, the cost of fuel, you know, oil, which anyone in the war situation in the military obviously knows that we own all the bullets already. We own all the gunpowder. We own all the firepower. We own all the equipment. We own all the electrical. We own everything. And the cost of war is fuel. When they estimated when we first went into Iraq that it would possibly cost us, you know, it was first estimated like $200 billion, I think, was George Bush's first comment, was $200 billion. And, you know, 90% of $200 billion was the cost of fuel, you know, going into it. And obviously we had a problem. Naturally, 9/11 happened and our buildings were tore down and we had some other incidents as
prior. That was before. That was before we went over there. Remember?
Pardon?
That was before we went.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So we got the cost. It's oil. It's fuel.
It's all about the price of oil, man.
That's what it is. And here's the situation. I don't think that, I mean, I don't think, honest, this is my opinion and a little research to follow in the background, and I'm sure a lot of people would agree with this, is that legitimately did Saddam Hussein have mass weapons of destruction? No.
He didn't have any.
Did he have the integrity to do it? Yes.
We destroyed everything. He had nothing. He had like a balsa wood plane or something. Like, I swear to you, he had nothing.
Right, exactly. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
but
I do.
Here's the whole philosophy behind it. He gave us a legitimate enough excuse to invade his country.
What was it? Because I don't agree.
He gave us a legitimate enough excuse to invade his country by avoiding the inspections of our United Nations inspections.
No, he let him in. He let them in. In fact, I am friends with one of those inspectors. I know. He let him in, and he even said, come on, let's have a meeting. But no, Bush would not listen. Bush didn't listen to him. Really. Believe me.
You got to admit, though, he was pulling a lot of little riffraff. He was playing his game, and here's why he was playing his game. The reason why Saddam was playing his game was because Iraq and Iran had been at war for years, okay? And Saddam,
we know, yeah.
So he was playing. It's like poker, okay? It's a poker game.
He knew. Saddam Hussein knew he had no chance.
Iran know that if he did not have this intelligence and this power back his ass, Iran would have invaded Iraq. And you know that as well as I do, Jules.
Well, okay. Jules is, but here's what Jules has to say, okay? We had no business going into Iraq, no matter how defiant Saddam Hussein ever was. So there's no excuse. We still shouldn't be there, and it's a bunch of hooey.
Right. Here's the fact of the matter, though. The fact of the matter is, our warships fly on oil, fuel.
Our ships fly?
Our planes.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Oil. Everything evolves.
Now I'm getting picky here.
So what we did is we strategically placed our troops above one of the largest oil fields in the world to hopefully become an ally of one of them that are one of the largest oil fields in the world, so we can continue to have oil.
Oh, yeah, and that's why we're nice to, listen, I need to cut this short because I have a bunch of calls I need to get in really quick, but
right.
We want all their oil. That's why we're still hanging tight with Saudi Arabia, because we need their oil. We now have Iraq's oil, and,
yeah.
And Afghanistan, Pipelanistan, as we say.
It's King Hussein that did this to us, though.
No.
He knows what he's doing. He's a smart man. He's a very intelligent, smart man.
Saddam Hussein?
When we got in,
he's dead. The dude's dead.
When we got into this whole thing with the terrorist act, it was because Bin Laden. Bin Laden is from Saudi Arabia.
I know he is. His family is. He's been kicked
right.
out of there. I know the whole thing.
But
listen, I have to cut you off. I hate to do it. Call again next week if you want, Michael, because we'd like to hear more from you. But I do have a lot of calls. And Ted in Ann Arbor has been waiting for a very long time. I apologize for the wait. But, Ted, thank you for calling.
Hi, Julene. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are things in Ann Arbor?
They are, well, they're getting better by the minute. You know how
right.
that goes.
Right on.
Well, first of all, I want to say that, Michael, don't call back next week. We want to hear nothing that you have to say.
You said it. I see. I'm so polite.
I know. Anyway, it has nothing to do with oil. It has nothing to do with anything other than controlling the land. That's why we're in Iraq. We're
the land,
Iraq.
Therefore, the oil, because now all of the U.S. oil companies are now bidding and getting that oil.
Yeah, but that's the elite. That's the bootlickers of the elite getting their, you know, the drippings of the master stable.
Yeah, but who runs everything? Who runs everything? The elite.
No, exactly, but the elite don't care about the oil. The elite can care less about the oil. That's why they'll give it to they'll pawn it off to these giant corporations that will rape the American people.
Right, yeah.
What they care about is who controls that land, because that land sits strategically between Israel and Iran.
Oh,
and
yeah, you're right.
And now we are on the backside of Iran in Afghanistan. So now we have Iran on a two-front war if we decide to invade Iran, because Iran is the only country in the Middle East that will threaten our big brother, Israel.
And we sure are ruffling our feathers at them as they are at us,
oh,
aren't
absolutely.
They?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because you know what? Because the country of Iran is funding Hamas, the country of Iran is funding the liberation of the Palestinian people against a vicious, vicious, tyrannical government that is 10,000 times worse than the Second World War could have ever been for.
Which country are you talking about?
I'm talking about Israel. What's
okay, thank you. I was hoping we were talking about the
yeah,
same country, because the Israeli army, the Israeli government, you know, that's a whole nother story, isn't it? I couldn't agree more with you, Ted. Thanks so much.
Iran backs them, so we're going to go against Iran.
Well, you know what?
And we're going to surround Iran, and we're going to threaten Iran, and we're going to tell Iran, look, you are not going to threaten Israel. That's the only reason we're there.
We're doing it right now as we speak.
Yeah,
all right, Ted.
The only reason.
Thanks for calling. Appreciate
it. Have a great night.
I love Ann Arbor. I want to go to Zingerman's. Love that place.
Oh, yeah, come on. I'll buy breakfast.
Okay, great. Sounds good. We're going to try to blaze through these phone calls. Kim in Highland calling about Iraq. Hi, Kim.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing fine. What's up tonight?
Well, I just want to talk about in the beginning of the Iraq War, I remember Donald Rumsfeld standing there at press conferences, and they asked him, how long do you think it's going to last? Oh, I don't know, 6 weeks, six months? I doubt it. And then when they were all looting in the streets, he thought it was funny and just let them go at it. And they were going to be liberated. I mean, they were going to be liberated, you know, greet us with roses in the streets and stuff.
Yeah, some liberation, huh?
Yeah, and I just think people forget that, you know. I mean, they thought, there was just incompetence at the top. They really thought it was going to last like 6 weeks and that would be it.
Right, and this is going to last for a long, 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 long time. And,
and
the American people, what is up with the short-term memory? My gosh.
Or not. It's like, you know, it's all about, they're oil men, Cheney and Bush, they're all oil people.
Oh, yeah, that's their background.
Oil.
Yeah, and Bechtel and Halliburton and
KBR.
KBR, exactly, all of those. And, boy, they are making so much money. They're having such a great time in this war economy. The rest of us, not so much, especially the innocent people who have nothing to do with any of it and who have lost their lives and family members. Kim, thanks a lot for calling in.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. A friend of the show, you can tell. And Jeff in Rochester, New York, he says everything's a little more optimistic outside of Michigan. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, how you doing, Jolene?
I'm doing just fine tonight. Thanks for calling from New York.
Yeah, I'm a transplanted Gross Pointer, and I hate to, I don't know how I can sugarcoat this, but I'm glad to be the hell out of the area because it's just too many damn right-wingers in Gross Point.
Well, Gross Point for sure. I grew up in a neighborhood just like Gross Point, and I grew up in a different state, but so I can feel your pain. I couldn't be happier to be out of there and in Ferndale, Michigan, where it rocks.
Yeah, well, I grew up there, went to school there in Detroit and Gross Point, went to residential school in Lansing for a while, but and for the most part had a pretty good time growing up in the 80s, you know, with all the music and with the recent trends to bring stuff back from the 80s. It's like, come on, come on, come on. It can't come back quicker.
Yeah.
But when I graduated from Ferris State University in 2001 and came back, I'm like, what the hell is going on with this area? 9/11 attacks, being surrounded. I mean, I felt like an outcast surrounded by all these Bush supporters.
Oh, yeah, I know. Well,
is there a way out?
Yeah. Bush in his, you know, brain and his family, he got real lucky because 9/11 happened. He got real lucky because he had those supporters. But then slowly but surely, they said, bye-bye, you're an idiot, you're evil, you're a warmonger, you're a war criminal, we don't like you, and you're dumb, and you're dumb, you know?
Right, and the other thing I was going to say is that, you know, even with trying to put in time to volunteer to get work experience, it seems like when you're in the Detroit area, it's all such doom and gloom, be it work or play.
Well, you know, I don't know. I really think that there's such a spirit still here in Detroit. To be honest with you, I go out and see bands and go to shows and go to, you know, restaurants when I can afford it, right?
Right.
And, you know, I think that people really, we have no choice but to do that, but to have a positive attitude, even though, you know, we bitch and moan and groan a lot. We still have to have some hope.
Well, let me just say this. When the moving van pulled out of the driveway at my mom's house when she was helping me relocate here to Rochester,
yeah,
I just was like, can we speed legally out of this area?
I lived in Miami for 3 years and just came back in, I think, 2006 is what it was. And I know the feeling of getting it out, especially if you're from here, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you're from here, it's your hometown, you want to get out. So that's natural. But so you found work in Rochester.
Yeah.
And what field are you in, Jeff?
Well, when I moved to Rochester, I started working for an agency for the blind, visually impaired, doing contract work in a call center for a program called Healthy New York, which is low-cost health insurance. And my bosses, if my bosses are listening to me from that call center, they'd kill me if they knew my real opinion of the program. Now I'm working in manufacturing, but I'm hoping to get back into something office or computer related, and I'm sad to say not in the Detroit area.
Yeah, well, we'd love to have you back.
I'd love to get out of there.
Well, it's a good thing your bosses probably aren't listening. See, I have no choice. I'm on the radio. My bosses listen to everything.
Well, There was one supervisor I had that I think that she doesn't know about Night Call, but I get the feeling she'd like Night Call.
Well, turn her on to it.
I never had the thought to let her know about it because I was dealing with a lot of other stuff work related.
I hear you. Well, spread the word. It's a good thing. Thank you so much, Jeff. And hey, good luck to you out there in New York.
All right.
All right.
Thank you.
You bet. One more phone call, Jimmy in California. Jimmy, are you there?
Yes, this is Jimmy James. What's going on?
Jimmy James, where are you in California, my man?
Banning, California.
Where?
Banning, California.
Okay, all right. We only have a couple of minutes, so spit her out.
It's where the dinosaurs are down on the 10th Freeway. We're a lot like Iraq and Afghanistan and Iran and all that kind of stuff.
In California?
Yeah, we're like the desert.
Oh, okay, all right.
Well, we got, instead of oil rigs, in Long Beach, we got a lot of oil rigs.
Yeah.
But other than that, we got a lot of windmills.
Oh, beautiful. I like that. Wind power.
Here was my thought, you know. Why don't we all convert over to electricity, natural resources, and then all these... I can't say that word.
I'm glad you stopped yourself. Good job.
Yeah, all these COC
S-U-C-K.
No. Okay, dump. You can't even spell it, dude. I have to cut you off. It's been such a clean show so far. Fortunately, we have a button, and it says dump, and then I can press it, and then no one hears those naughty little words that people tend to say, especially when they're drunk. Jimmy in California, have another drink. Well, it's been a great show. It's been fun talking to all of you. Night Call, Peter Werby back next week, and a couple of interviews from Peter, so it's kind of like he's here. Thanks for being here, everyone.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
Woohoo!
Win big at the casino?
Nope, better than that. I just got a great deal at MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
Ah, yes, MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com. The online connection to half off or more deals from tons of Metro Detroit businesses.
I always look there first. They're the best bet for online coupons and discounts.
This week, MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com is featuring Premier Pet Supply in Beverly Hills and Fast Frames in Bloomfield Hills.
Jackpot! Nobody beats MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
Deal yourself a winning hand. Save time and money by shopping from the comfort of your own home when you connect to amazing deals like these and more at MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-493-8159. Now you have qualified help in dealing with the IRS. This is the second chance you never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-493-8159. Call right now for your second chance. 1-800-493-8159. That's 1-800-493-8159.
101.1 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Peter Werby here with you. Thank you for joining me. Most people in Detroit know that we don't have a daily paper any longer. Some of the suburbs do, but the old Lions of West Lafayette Street are no longer publishing every day. The three times a week, the Detroit News, the Detroit Free Press. We always think people, we can always tell when people aren't from Detroit because they say the Detroit Free Press, where actually us is in the Motor City say the Detroit Free Press. They've gone to 3 days a week. This is not unusual. This is happening all over the country. The Ann Arbor News is no longer printing a print edition at all. We're seeing the collapse of print media, and most people say, well, yeah, like that's so 20th century, and we're moved into the 21st century. We have online news. It's immediate. We don't even have to have dailies. What's the big deal? Well, my guest and his co-author think differently. John Nichols has written the book The Death and Life of American Journalism, The Media Revolution That Will Begin the World Again. He's written it with his co-author, Robert W. McChesney. And John Nichols has been on my program a number of times before. The last time when The Nation magazine, for which John is the Washington correspondent, had a rally down in Cobo Hall. And also, John has worked as a daily newspaper journalist and magazine writer for 25 years. He's reported from more than 25 countries. He's interviewed every U.S. president since Jimmy Carter. He was a pioneer political blogger for The Nation magazine, and he's also the Washington correspondent. He's the associate editor of the Capital Times in Madison, Wisconsin, co-founder of Free Press, in this case. That's freepress.net, and appears regularly on the cable news channels as well. It's a pleasure to welcome him from his Washington, D.C. office. John Nichols, have you dug out of the snow yet?
Washington is not prepared to deal with weather, okay?
Yeah.
So here's my bottom line. My first proposal, after we fix the media and our democracy, we're moving the capital to Michigan.
Well, we're getting some weather, too. But
Michigan's got snow plows, at least,
yeah,
you know? And yeah. I'll tell you this. For all the talk about Michigan's economic troubles, You put the capital in Michigan, it'll be fine.
There you go.
There'll be so much money flying around.
Oh, yeah.
What to do.
Corporate money coming in by the hundreds of millions.
Oh, yeah. The lobbyists will pay for it all.
This is another story, though. This story is the death and life of American journalism, although not that these issues aren't all connected. Everyone has been predicting the death of print media, but John Nichols, is it the death of journalism as well? Why are they connected? I mean, goodbye 20th century media. Hello, 21st century.
Yeah, I mean, this is a very good question, Peter, and you get to the heart of the matter. Bob and I, when we set out to write this book, we're not obsessed with saving old newspapers. We've frankly spent a lot of our adult lives as critics of particularly newspapers, but also a lot of broadcast television. But here's the dynamic of what's occurring right now. We saw the decline of network and local television the better part of 20 years ago when the newsrooms of television stations stopped being the gems of the stations and they were turned into cost centers, i.e. the news had to make money. And once you shifted over to that game, you saw the replacement of big, strong local news operations on television with a lot of weather reporting and crime reporting and quote-unquote news you can use, which are basically exercise tips for fat people in the suburbs, right?
Sure.
So television kind of disappeared as an entity. Many major cities like Detroit have TV stations, but if you actually counted the number of reporters working, there wouldn't be enough to cover a small town, let alone a big metro area. So then radio really changed with the Telecommunications Act of 1996 when we allowed for massive consolidation of radio ownership. What happened was a few big companies bought a lot of stations and they laid off a lot of personalities. The better part of 20,000 on-air personalities on radio over the last 15 years, many of them news gatherers and news reporters. So radio begins to disappear. So we're down to the newspaper newsroom. And the newspaper newsroom was always the biggest generator of original news stories in any town. But now we're seeing two things happen. One, newspapers actually close. They just shut down altogether with no replacement. Not some sort of web operation that's filling the void, but literally just disappearing in many communities around the country. And at the same time, we're seeing the ones that remain, the newspapers that are still in the business, go through a cycle much like what you're seeing in Detroit with both the news and the free press, where they still put a paper out. They create the fantasy of covering the whole region, doing all the stuff that they once did, but they're doing it with a dramatically downsized staff, sometimes half or less of the staff they had 10 years ago.
Well,
news is disappearing with them.
Well, let me cut into that. I mean, it appears as an infrequent reader of the Detroit Free Press, which I never even look at the news, but what they've decided is we're going to hit, like, the big story. So when John Conyers' wife, Monica Conyers, and the Detroit Council gets involved in a kickback scandal and her aide is on trial now, that's, you know, big headlines, and they're digging pretty deep into it. Or the Free Press really dug deep and did incredible work to blow the mayor of Detroit, Kwame Kilpatrick, out of office. Well deserved, I would say. So, I mean, it looks like exactly what you and your co-author would like to see: crusading journalism against corruption in a major city.
Absolutely.
Major city. Okay. We'll still say we are.
But Detroit's a major city. In fact, Detroit actually, we always say, if we can't get Detroit right, how do we get America right?
That's right.
We already have written off in this country too many cities, East St. Louis and places like that, where there's just so little attention from policymakers and really even from a lot of progressives. And so it's immoral to write off major American cities.
I was going to say Detroit. One of the things, the U.S. Social Forum that's coming here in June.
Yeah.
We refer to it as the solution city. Exactly.
That's right.
The renewal can begin here.
Absolutely. You begin in the cities that have been hardest hit.
Yeah.
But this is a good example as regards news. You definitely can always find the exception to the rule that tells you everything's okay, right? That we have a crusading newspaper that actually does go after a mayor who, frankly, with all due respect, was pretty easy to get.
Sure.
It wasn't all that hard to go after him, in fairness. But the problem is that that creates the fantasy that everything else is being covered, that every other issue is being dealt with. And I'll give you a very good example of what great newspapers in Detroit, Michigan should be doing. I mean, in a city the size of Detroit, with the metro area of its size, if you had newspapers that were taking the level of profits that they used to take before all the chain buyouts, before all of the profiteering, frankly, by investors, and you went back to that old-fashioned 3 to 7% profit level, which was a traditional profit level for a newspaper, both the Detroit News and the Free Press would be much thicker newspapers. They could be full of a lot more news, and they could actually have full-time, big staffs of reporters looking seriously at fundamental questions about how you reindustrialize Michigan, how you make Michigan competitive in the world economy, not by cutting corners and scrapping services and you know, dumbing down the whole thing, but maybe by really, you know, developing models that work. And newspapers ought to be at the center of exploring how problems get solved, not merely reporting when problems hit you. And the fact of the matter is, no institution ought to care more about a community, should be more engaged with the community, than its local newsroom. And I separate that term from newspaper. A newsroom may well, in very short order, exist online. It may not be in print anymore. But the bottom line is, there's got to be a pack of people who know a community, know it well, and have the resources and the support to go out on a daily basis and try and explore and hopefully come up with ideas about how to make it better. What we're seeing die in communities across the country, especially low-income communities, cities with large populations of ethnic and racial minorities, is the abandonment of serious news gathering and analysis in those towns. News gathering and analysis of a original form, not aggregating stuff that's appeared elsewhere, but really original, that looks at places, is retreating to Washington. You see a lot of people talk about what's going on in Washington and the suburbs. You see a lot of people talking about what concerns the wealthy. And so we end up with a terrible problem in America where our dialogue is about whether we've got too big a deficit, right?
Sure.
At a time when we've got 10% unemployment. Now, in the 1930s, as bad as things were in the 1930s, you know, Franklin Roosevelt wasn't having to deal with people saying, you're working too hard to get unemployment down. You know, there were critics, but the critics didn't dare say something as stupid as what most of our American media is now saying with regard to our current economic situation.
Let me reintroduce you. John Nichols, the Washington correspondent for The Nation magazine, has written with Robert W. McChesney, The Death and Life of American Journalism, The Media Revolution That Will Begin the World Again. We'll get to the subtitle in a little while. You can go to nationbooks.com, or you can go to my website, peterwerby.com. Also, freepress.net. You won't get to the Detroit Free Press. That I'm sure they'd love to have that one, but they're at freep.com. You know, here's, before we spoke, I said I had something of a disagreement with you. And
sure.
Having also read your article in the Nation from January 25th, How to Save Journalism, the Patriotic Case for Government Action, was that the daily newspapers, let's take the Detroit News and the Detroit Free Press, which at the time throughout the last century had other newspapers in town, in lockstep, they supported every war. Were against the unionization, against the vote for women, for prohibition, against everything. I mean, the newspapers that when I think of the daily press, I think corporate or right wing, usually . So
and a little of both.
Yeah. So I have to say that. Yeah, actually, you're right. Both, not and or. That when I hear about many of these newspapers going under, I say, well, we say something in Detroit, which I won't say the last two words, but adios. And because as far as I'm concerned, in terms of the what The Nation magazine and you, John Nichols, are concerned about in terms of really making changes in this country, those two newspapers were always against everything we ever stood for and our predecessors, including the New Deal.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And
so, who cares? Goodbye.
Bob and I aren't talking about saving the old newspaper companies.
Okay.
It's not like we're talking about some kind of bailout for Gannett or for Knight Ritter or whatever's left, whatever it became. You know, look, these are the people who steered the car off the cliff, right?
Right.
And frankly, you're right. Adios. Let them keep their foot on the accelerator as they go over the cliff. That doesn't bother us at all. What bothers us is they've got all the journalists who actually do want to do a good job locked in the trunk. And as they go off the cliff, we're taking thousands of years of determined commitment to communities by genuinely interested and engaged individuals, many of them trade unionists who fought bitter battles to, try and keep their jobs, get a decent small amount of pay and benefits on their newspapers. You know, in Detroit, the great strikes of the Free Press and the News, right?
Sure, 1995 to 2000,
yeah.
Right.
So
yeah.
As we take those cars over the cliff, right? What we're talking about, what Bob and I are talking about, is unlocking the trunk and pulling the journalists out.
Well, let's go to the subtitle, then, of The Death and Life of American Journalism, The Media Revolution That Will Begin the World Again. So we've got, and you're right, since I was very active being a union member myself, not of their union, but the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists, I supported them wholeheartedly, walked a lot of picket lines, and they're great people, and they do...
They're pretty good people, right?
They're better than pretty good. They're terrific, and they are exactly...
Know something, Peter? I'll give you a good example of what I'm talking about. I used to be a journalist in Ohio. I worked for the Toledo Blade. And I covered a woman down there who was the leading anti-nuclear activist in her community. I mean, just really shut down the nuclear plant, very, very passionate campaigner on it. You know where she worked?
Where?
The nuclear plant.
Okay.
And she was a single mom who had three kids.
Yeah.
Right? So a lot of people work for folks that they don't totally respect or love.
Sure.
And we need to separate journalists from the institutions that they have worked for, the very failed and often dysfunctional institutions, and recognize that journalism itself, the craft practiced by Tom Paine at the founding of the American experiment, the craft practiced by so many of the great radicals throughout the history of this country and the world. Journalism is the vehicle by which we, the people, have an ability to speak truth to power, to investigate it, to challenge it, to go into those battles with a passion and an energy that the individual, isolated, can't always bring to the fight, but that we can have somebody there who does it. Unfortunately, we've got now today such a warped understanding of journalism that we think it's just a sustainer of power.
Sure.
What Bob and I are talking about is fundamentally changing the way that we think about journalism and the way that we think about supporting it so that we supercharge funding of public broadcasting and community radio in this country so it's no longer starved. We begin to rival the level of support that you see in every other democracy in the world, and so that we really start to make a commitment to make sure that young people who want to go into journalism have a way of doing it by taking the model of AmeriCorps, which takes a kid who wants to go teach in a inner city or a rural neighborhood that's underserved and provides them a stipend and gets them into the game. We think there should be a News AmeriCorps where young journalists are, you know, given an opportunity to go to work, particularly in underserved communities, to develop websites, to work for community radio stations, maybe even in some cases to work in commercial sectors so long as it's not breaking a union. You know, there are so many innovative ways that we can move right now, to sustain and actually expand the practice of journalism in our most underserved communities. Unfortunately, what's going on, instead of those kind of innovative, creative approaches, is a kind of retreat to the sidelines where we're basically saying, well, maybe the old companies will figure out a new way to make money doing journalism, or maybe some magical thing will happen on the internet, right?
Sure.
But what we don't do is what we always have done at our best, which is say, yeah, we believe that there are all sorts of creative ideas. We think that there really are probably answers out there, but we're not going to wait 20, 25 years for some corporation to come up with the answer. We're going to step in and make sure the communities get covered and that we have journalism.
Well, John Nichols, there's got to be at least one person out there that's thinking, whoa, wait a minute, just as I thought, he's going to dip into my pocket to pay for somebody else's work on media. Why should I want any of my tax dollars to go to something that ought to be left to the market?
Well, the market has failed.
Yeah.
Right? The market has absolutely failed. It is, and you know the failure. The market failed in Ann Arbor. The daily newspaper is no longer coming out daily, and they've got a, you know, shell of a website there that really isn't doing the job. There's some really hardworking people trying, but it's certainly not sufficient. It failed in 140 countries across, or cities across this country. 140 newspapers closed last year. It's failing at a rate of 1,000 newspaper employees a month being laid off by papers across the country. We've lost 30,000 newspaper employees in the last 2 years. That is a failure. It's collapsing. And so say to ourselves, okay, maybe the market will figure things out someday. Maybe it will. But do you really want to live in the dark until that happens? One of the things we found on the tour for this book, going to cities all over this country, and not always liberal cities, appearing on great shows like this, but also appearing on a lot of shows hosted by very conservative talk radio folks, what we have found across the board is that Americans want information, and that when you talk to them about it honestly and you say, look, the information is the one tool that makes us equal to everybody else. If we know what's going on, we can cast our vote with a power that is absolutely equal to that of any CEO. But if we don't have information, we are disempowered. If you say it in that way, we find that there's actually a great deal of sympathy for taking steps to make sure that we get democracy-sustaining information.
Let's look at another aspect of what you, John Nichols, and Robert McChesney suggest, and that is subsidizing already existing print media. Now you, both you and I, have a dog in this fight, because the publication that I work for, the almost 50-year-old Fifth Estate newspaper, although that term now is come quite in vogue, and The Nation, which is what, 150 or something,
almost
150 years old, we're getting killed by postage, right? Those rates could literally drive both of these venerable publications out of business. So a subsidy would be, for instance, that regularly appearing publications with circulation under or an income under could mail free. Would that work?
And you know where we get that crazy idea from?
Where's that?
To say that publications of the left and the right, in the book we write about the American conservative publication, the very right-wing magazine that's experiencing a lot of financial trouble because of high postal rates, and we explain, as you know, and as maybe some of your listeners do, that the really big magazines like People Magazine and all that cut a deal with the Postal Service so that they get the low rates, and the little journals of opinion, the ones that actually have ideas, not just celebrity, you know, like weight loss tips, get charged more, right? They tip the balance in favor of the big guys and against the little guys. What we're saying is that we want to tip that balance back. We think ideas matter more than the sexiest man alive. And we borrow the idea for this, the baseline idea for this, from a bunch of crazy guys named Jefferson, Madison, Washington, Alexander Hamilton, Andrew Jackson, Abraham Lincoln. Because for the first 80 years of this country's history, we had massive postal subsidies. We went out of our way to make sure that journals of opinion, newspapers, and magazines could circulate as freely as possible. Because as James Madison, the essential author of the Constitution, said, any charge on a publication to go through the mails is a form of censorship, and that censorship will always fall hardest on the dissenting opinions that are most needed in a democratic society. That's what the founders said. And a root American ideal.
I'm all for that. Is it having any political expression? I mean, is it possible to, is it on the political agenda, or could it, can it be brought onto the political agenda?
Yeah, it actually is. In fact, bizarrely enough, and I know that, you know, Bob and I have written a lot of books, and we've had a little bit of success in getting through to people. We beat the Bush administration's 2003 proposal to allow massive consolidation of local media ownership. We've been, not we ourselves, but as part of a great coalition, but our books have had some influence, and we also have had a great deal of success in the fight to defend network neutrality on the Internet, make sure that it doesn't get taken over by the telecommunications companies. So we've fought these battles before. We know our way around Washington. When this book came out, in very short order, we got a call from a member of the Federal Communications Commission, Michael Copps, who is extremely interested in talking about it. He actually wants to meet with us. We will in short order. We also have been asked by the Postal Commission, the Postal Regulatory Commission, to meet with them and to talk with them about these ideas and about some of these issues. We've had members of Congress take these issues up. I testified last year before the House Judiciary Committee with Congressman Conyers and others. And so we're not yelling from the sidelines. The fact of the matter is that there's a consciousness that these are real issues. And one of the things that we think is so very important is that we have found allies on the right and the left on this. This is not some sort of ideological crusade of one side or the other. The only people that we find who are really passionately against us are those who think that corporations ought to run everything. We just think that it ought to be a little bit of a broader dialogue. And some conservatives think that, too.
Real quickly, because we're almost out of time, a future for newspapers like in Detroit? Is there?
Mm-hmm. There's a little bit of a future, but it's probably online. The fact of the matter is that none of our proposals would get rid of commercial media. We think that there should be public media, not-for-profit media, and commercial, a real variety of voices out there. We do think that in some elite situations, the old daily newspaper may continue for a while, but by and large, it will become a digital vehicle. And there are tons of creative ideas coming into play. You may read your newspaper on an iPad or something like that in the future, but all that we're concerned about is whatever form it takes, that there be a lot of journalism and a lot of speaking truth to power that is contained in that publication, be it a broadcast publication, a print publication, or a digital one.
Absolutely important, critical to our democracy, if we're not to let the corporations buy and sell everything. The book is The Death and Life of American Journalism, The Media Revolution That Will Begin the World Again. The authors are Robert W. McChesney and John Nichols, who has been my guest. You can go to freepress.net and nationbooks.org. I said the other one last time, so it's .org. Also, there'll be a link on my website, Peter Werbe, werbe.com. John Nichols, as usual, thanks for being with us.
It's a terrific pleasure to be with you.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
Join the Riff's own Screamin' Scott Randall tomorrow starting at 10:30 a.m. at the T-Mobile Limited off M59 in front of Lakeside Mall in Sterling Heights. Stop by and catch a free live performance from the Sick Puppies. Plus, register to win tickets to their show later that night with Chevelle. Also, check out the hottest Samsung phones, including the Comeback Highlight or Behold 2.
Are you having trouble paying your credit card bills? You didn't expect to get so deep in debt, but now you need a way out, a way to relieve the anxiety, a way to avoid disaster. If you have over $12,000 in credit card debt, call Debt Settlement USA at 1-877-560-8877. Debt Settlement USA has a proven debt reduction program that can cut the amount you owe and get you out of debt faster than you could on your own. They've saved millions of dollars for their clients, and they can help you get back in control again, too. If your resolution is to get out of debt, call Debt Settlement USA for a free consultation. 1-877-560-8877. Your call is confidential, and there's no obligation. If you have over $12,000 in credit card bills, they can cut the amount you owe and help you get out of debt. Call Debt Settlement USA right now. 1-877-560-8877. That's 1-877-560-8877.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Pleasure to be with you. Let me here real quickly grab my copy of the U.S. Constitution and go to the Bill of Rights, as most of us learned in civics class. That is the first 10 amendments to the Constitution. And Amendment 1, freedom of religion, press, and expression. And it begins with Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. The founding fathers were very clear about that. But then it says that that there should be no abridging of freedom of speech. Joining me is Christopher M. Finan. And Chris Finan is the president of the American Booksellers Foundation for Free Expression. He's worked for Free Expression Group since 1982. He's currently chair of the National Coalition Against Censorship, also a trustee of the Freedom to Read Foundation. He is the author of Alfred E. Smith, The Happy Warrior, and he lives in Brooklyn, New York, where Alfred E. Smith was a politician back in the 20s. The book that Chris Finan has written is called From the Palmer Raid to the Patriot Act, A History of the Fight for Free Speech in America. Chris Finan, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Well, thanks very much, Peter.
Well, now, the reason I read the First Amendment to the Constitution about freedom of speech, why should there be a Chris Finan book about the history of fight for free speech in America? It's guaranteed.
It is guaranteed, but the fact is that we've had censorship in this country almost from the beginning, and that, you know, only 7 years after the adoption of that amendment by the founding fathers, one half of the founding fathers was trying to throw the other half of the founding fathers in jail for precisely speech that you would assume was protected by the First Amendment. It was speech critical of the government. It was the Jeffersonians criticizing the Federalists. And the law that was passed by the Federalist Congress made it a crime to say anything disparaging of the government. So these issues have very much been, you know, in play from the beginning.
Now, that's pretty typical of most governments. Many, many governments have laws forbidding criticism of the state. But the founding fathers, in their amazing wisdom, I mean, so most of us had civics shoved down our throat. So I think it's hard not to, it's hard sometimes to appreciate the genius that went into the this foundation document that is the basis of our government here. So the founding fathers, of course, knew the consequences of speech that the ruler didn't like in England, right?
Right. Well, that was the background, of course, for the Constitution and the First Amendment. Although, you know, originally not everybody was convinced that we needed a First Amendment. They believed that they had limited the power of the federal government just by the terms of the Constitution, and that the federal government couldn't interfere with free speech. And yet they found out just a few years later that that it could. So. But it's also true that there's a new intensity to the fight over free speech when the federal government itself begins to grow early in the 20th century. In fact, to fight, it grows largely to fight the war, to fight World War I. And that's when we have the first real sustained clash over free speech, and when a lot of people are put in jail for nothing more than criticizing America's intervention in World War I.
Well, maybe we can talk about that, because I was going to ask you, your book starts essentially in 1919 when the raids from the Attorney General Palmer began against immigrants and radicals and unionists, and then you take it up to 2001 with the passage of the Patriot Act. So that's why it focuses on the 20th century and the early 21st century here, because it's intensified, as you say.
Yeah, there had been, clearly there had been censorship before. I mean, we had in this country a very far-reaching law called the Comstock Act, passed shortly after the Civil War, that made it extremely difficult to sell works dealing with sexual subjects, either fictional works or works that talked about even advocated changes in marriage or advocated birth control were banned under the Comstock Act. So there was a lot of censorship. But my book is really a study of the fight against censorship rather than the censorship itself. And that really begins, even though there are earlier battles, that begins in a sustained way, in a way that, you know, we, you know, our antecedents, my antecedents as a civil libertarian, you know, stretch back to 1917 and 1918 and 1919, and even more critically 1920, when the American Civil Liberties Union is formed and becomes, you know, the center of the fight for free speech. Well, so it's really a story of how our rights have expanded under the First Amendment since World War One.
I think when people say that George W. Bush has the most repressive government in American history, they really haven't read history, and certainly that probably one of the worst periods, if not the worst period, was under a Democratic president, with the lead up to World War One, the America's fight in it, and after. Do you accept that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah? I think, you know, if the standards of World War One applied today, John Stewart would be in jail.
And I was going to say, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
No.
Yeah.
No, because really, the types of speech that were punished during World War One were, you know, some of the mildest expressions of disagreement with government policy. You know, kind of on a colloquial level. I mean, people were prosecuted for saying Wilson, you know, President Woodrow Wilson was a fathead. They were prosecuted for sending petitions to the government calling for changes in the draft laws. They were prosecuted for making movies that historical movies, in fact, that showed the British in a bad light. So it was the most basic kinds of speech that today we wouldn't, you know, we would be absolutely appalled if we saw people prosecuted. But there were 2,000 prosecutions during World War One, and we were only in it for 18 months. 2,000 prosecutions and over 1,000 convictions. The leader of the Socialist Party, which at that time was a large third party in this country, Eugene Debs, was convicted of violating the Espionage Act for telling people, even though he knew that government stenographers were taking down his every word, he thought he could say, you know, you have, you know, you're made for something better than slavery and cannon fodder. And for that, he gets convicted and sent to the federal penitentiary for 10 years.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say that there was also, besides government repression, official government repression, there was also vigilante suppression of people's right to speak as well.
Right. I mean, the government encouraged the formation, basically, of vigilante groups to weed out dissidents, and they took it on themselves sometimes in a very direct way. And I mean, some of these vigilante groups, in fact, carried badges from the Department of Justice and took justice into their own hands and pulled people off of trains to search there to find out whether they were draft dodgers. And at the other extreme, you know, actually participated in the tarring and feathering of German Americans or socialists for remarks that were deemed unpatriotic. So while I wouldn't underestimate the pressure on free speech right now, I think there is pressure. It certainly can't compare to being thrown in a jail cell.
The book is From the Palmer Raids to the Patriot Act, A History of the Fight for Free Speech in America. Christopher M. Finan is my guest. It's published by Beacon Press, and you can go to chrisfinan.com. That's FINAN.com, chrisfinan.com. I'll have a link on my site as well, peterwerby.com. In the area, you mentioned the Comstock Act, which forbid almost anything from going through the mails, birth control information, anything like that. And yet many conservatives, cultural conservatives, say that there's no censorship anymore, that we have completely, the civil libertarians have completely obliterated any sort of of restraint on, I mean, so anything is publishable, anything is showable, and to a large extent that appears to be true. I mean, maybe in answering that you could talk a little about how, I mean, everybody from Henry Miller to, I'm trying to think of all the other, D.H. Lawrence and James Joyce, you know, the classics of literature couldn't even be sold here in this country. So it would look on the face of it that other than, like, the problems with the Patriot Act, hey, we won.
Well, we definitely made important gains over the course of the last century in protecting artistic speech. And although, you know, it's much more recent than you might imagine. You know, the Supreme Court doesn't really begin to protect artistic speech in this country until the 1950s. And there are still prosecutions in the early 1960s. When Tropic of Cancer is published in the early 1960s, the police go on a rampage around the country, and there are 60 prosecutions of bookstores for selling what's widely acknowledged around the rest of the world as classic work of literature. And the fact is that what the Supreme Court does is it takes the definition of obscenity, which in the Comstock Act there is no definition for obscenity. It's just anything that a jury might deem to be obscene can be suppressed. And it creates a definition for it, a three-part definition that dramatically narrows the range that government can, of material that government can suppress. But it's important to remember that those laws are still, those obscenity laws, narrowed obscenity laws are now on the books in almost every state in the country. And they are occasionally used to prosecute and harass people for selling, you know, legitimate artistic materials. We, not that long ago, 1990, in fact, there was a real witch hunt going on in this country for books of nude photography by the acclaimed artist Jock Sturgis, and there were people going into Borders and Barnes and Noble stores around the country and ripping those up and encouraging prosecutions by local police on the claim that because they contained pictures of nude families, his subject was is often nude families in France, and because there were children nude in those pictures, that therefore it constituted child pornography. So there's a constant,
But I'm sure there's got to be some listeners saying, whoa, wait a minute. I'm for free speech and freedom of expression, but we're starting to move the line a little beyond what we see as a healthy expression of creativity or artistry. I mean, are there no lines? I mean, that's what...
The Supreme Court has a separate definition for child pornography, and child pornography, defined by the Supreme Court, is any picture that depicts a child engaged in sexual conduct or lascivious exhibition of the genitals. It's a very narrow definition. It's even narrower than the definition of obscenity, and nobody in the book publishing world, no bookseller, has a problem with that. The problem in this particular case of the Jock Sturgis books was that, these were pictures of naked kids. They weren't lascivious. The kids weren't engaged in sexual conduct. You know, it was a work of art. And yet, some people viewed it as child pornography and set out to destroy these books and to force booksellers to stop selling them. And that effort failed because legally there was nothing wrong with these works. But I only raised the issue to point out that there are still laws on the books, and when there are still people who are aggrieved, as you say, cultural conservatives, and not just cultural conservatives, but also we've had attacks from feminists on the left on sexually explicit material in an effort to suppress that material. So we are hardly we're in a much improved position in terms of being able to defend art from censorship today than we were 100 years ago. But the fight goes on.
Yeah, there's one type of censorship I do support, and that's self-censorship. If you don't like something, don't look at it, don't buy it, what have you. And, I mean,
right.
The idea that you can extend your sense of the world onto other people's by force of law, I think, is truly authoritarian. Chris Meinen is my guest on the Peter Werby Show. His book, From the Palmer Raids to the Patriot Act, A History of the Fight for Free Speech in America. I do want to move into the present, but just I'm just so fascinated by your history here, and assuming that there's lots of people that probably don't even know the kind of suppression that existed, as you say, just a generation ago. Tell us about Banned in Boston. I know, for instance, in Detroit, there was a Detroit Police Film Board. And there was a couple of guys, my parents and my dad said, boy, I'd like to have his job. You got to see every film that ever was exhibited in Detroit, and they'd say, oh, no, who, we're not having that. You can't be, in your bathing suits on the beach and from here to eternity. They cut out that famous scene in that film, apparently. Tell us specifically about Boston, because you talk quite a bit about that, but also in general, the local censorship boards around the country.
Well, the fight in Boston was in the 1920s. It was just a few years after the founding of the ACLU. And in fact, the ACLU really didn't want to touch the fight with a 10-foot pole, because they were much more focused on political censorship, and they were afraid to get involved in a fight over, you know, seeming smut. Even though, as I said, under the Comstock law, the range of materials that could be suppressed was far, you know, greater than what we would call smut today. And in Boston, we had a situation where there was a growing movement in literature toward greater realism in the depiction of sexual activity, and whether in the novels of D.H. Lawrence or, as you pointed out, in James Joyce's Ulysses, that ran smack into a bunch of local groups, anti-obscenity groups that fought back tooth and nail against them. And in Boston, it resulted in the suppression of, 40 to 50 books over a, six-year period, including some of the greatest authors in American literature. And, there was Faulkner, there was, Hemingway, there was the English people were Lawrence and the Irishman Joyce, of course, and there was a sustained fight in an effort to drive those books out of Boston, which gave Boston the reputation as being a very censorious town, even though 100 years before it had been this great intellectual capital of the country. And the fight was joined there, and ACLU, against its better instincts, was drawn into the fight, and important steps were taken, and ultimately the very broad Massachusetts obscenity law was narrowed somewhat, and kind of the symbol of the victory was the declaration by the United States government in 1933 that Ulysses was not obscene, was protected by the First Amendment. But these fights, as you point out, it went on in almost every community around the country, and there were film boards throughout the country. There was the Detroit police actually had a reputation in the 50s for being particularly hard on paperback books. They had their own Bureau of Review that told distributors what paperback books could be distributed in Detroit. And what these censors succeeded in doing was really removing from the American people the right to make their own choices about what they wanted to see, read, and hear. And the film industry was a particular target, because there was a great deal of concern about the masses and what the masses might be seeing on the big screen. And the film censors throughout the country did their own versions of films. They applied the scissors themselves.
They were the editor.
In some cases, you know, they cut long, they cut kisses out entirely or shorten them. They took out pictures of women nursing babies, even the most. They took out pictures of women even knitting baby clothes because it suggested that, you know, something was going on inside that woman, which might give people ideas.
How did it get there? Yeah.
They took out depictions of municipal corruption because they thought, you know, people should respect their elected officials. They took out whatever they wanted to, really, and infantilized American, you know, a lot of American films, and forced the film industry to self-censor, something that continued in this country really until the 1960s. The code that the film industry imposed upon itself, and that excluded things like any depictions of homosexuality or even suggestions of homosexuality.
Chris Finan, let's do this. I noticed by the clock we're getting close to the end, and we haven't gotten up to the present.
Okay.
My fault. To the Patriot Act, as you indicated earlier, under the presidency of Woodrow Wilson, a man was prosecuted for for uttering the words. Was it that Woodrow Wilson was a fathead? Was that
right?
Well,
right.
I mean, I'll say it right out. George W. Bush is a fathead. Nothing's going to happen to me.
No.
I don't think the Homeland Security is going to come gobble me up. The Patriot Act, I mean, there certainly has been a lot of challenges to it. But what in it is a problem for censorship or repression of expression?
Well, we're most concerned, booksellers, the people I work for, and librarians have devoted most of our attention to the portion of the Patriot Act which allows the government to get the records of what we read whenever they feel that they need them. Under the Patriot Act, it used to be that, and in most contexts outside the national security context, if the police feel that they need library records or bookstore records for some reason, they have to have probable cause to believe that a crime has been committed, and if they can't show probable cause, booksellers or librarians can challenge those subpoenas and have them suppressed. What the Patriot Act does is basically says anything the government wants in a national security investigation, it can have. And we believe that that is a threat, that has a chilling effect on people, when they go into bookstores and libraries, and potentially prevents them from buying books that they don't want the government to know that they read.
Well, wouldn't people in response say, hey, look, we just had the head of Homeland Security says he has a, quote, feeling that there could be a terrorist attack. That this is not broad-based and not stopping the selling of books. Maybe in extraordinary times their little censorship isn't so bad.
Well, the question is what constitutes extraordinary times, and you know, extraordinary measures in a short period of time are one thing. Measures that could chill free speech, you know, for decades is something else, and has to be a lot more carefully considered. In general, we have given the government very broad powers of surveillance over us. At the same time that it is adopting an increasing amount of secrecy about itself. And in the past, that's been a bad combination. Because if we can't see what the government is doing, and we ourselves are afraid of that the government may be spying on us, abuses occur. And, you know, in the 50s and in the 60s, the FBI took it on itself to spy on what it considered to be America's enemies, communists, leaders of the civil rights movement, including Martin Luther King, leaders of the anti-war movement, the movement against the war in Vietnam. And not only did they spy on those critics of American policy, they actually sought to disrupt their political activity. So what we're trying to do in raising questions about the Patriot Act and the expansion of government powers is not to deprive the government of the power it needs to to fight terrorism. Obviously, terrorism is a real threat. But what we're saying is that, based on our historical experience, it's important to have safeguards.
Well, I agree completely. And actually, there's a number of great quotes on the back of your book. Anthony Lewis, former New York Times a columnist and author of Gideon's Trumpet, says, American history is marred by recurrent episodes of hate, red scares, super patriotism, fear of sexual expression. Christopher Finan brilliantly paints that record and shows how courageous Americans have fought for freedom. And it's all contained in the book, lots more in there, obviously. From the Palmer Raids to the Patriot Act, a history of the fight for free speech in America. My guest has been Christopher M. Finan. You can see Chris's website at Chris Finan, FINAN.com. You can go to beacon.org. Beacon is the publisher. Also, a lot on my website will be links to this book, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. Chris Finan, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Peter. It's been fun.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Rip Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
WRIF.com every day. Look for 40 years and 40 days. Check out great events in rock history and some cool rock polls. It's powered by Spexhauer School of Media Arts, celebrating their 40th anniversary. Visit Spexhauer's on EDU today or call 866-61-SPEX.
Do you know someone who always seems well-connected? Here's your chance to one-up that person and then some. Welcome to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, your online connection to half-offer more deals from tons of Metro Detroit businesses. Simply log on to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com for special online coupons and discounts you can't get anywhere else. This week's featured deals are Premier Pet Supply in Beverly Hills and Fast Frames in Bloomfield Hills. All you have to do is visit MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com. You'll save time and money by shopping from the comfort of your computer. Heck, you don't even have to get dressed. No shirt, no shoes, no problem.
Shot naked, man. Yeah!
Dressed or not, just go to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com and you'll be connected to these incredible deals and more. MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, man. Hey, like, this chair is really cold.
MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
Do you see chalky water spots on your dishes and tub that drive you crazy? Those spots are a warning that your plumbing may have a serious limescale buildup. What you can't see is limescale clogging your pipes, breaking down your appliances, and blocking their heating elements. And that could be costing you $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove hard water limescale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy with HydraCare. Just visit bestofwater.com. HydraCare has been sold for years by the major utility in England as the ideal treatment to reduce and prevent limescale. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents limescale buildup in your entire plumbing system. Guaranteed. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances and save money with HydraCare. Just go to bestofwater.com. Lower your energy costs. Visit bestofwater.com. That's bestofwater.com.
Ladies and gentlemen,
all right, listen up.
Back to the Rock 101 WRIF, everything that rocks.